Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Leff, and that's Wendy Snyder, and we're here for you at any point if you want to jump in on today's show, 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy. How are you?
Top of the morning to you, Billy.
Isn't this this is perfect outside.
Well,
this
it's just calm perfect. Before the storm tomorrow.
Yeah, I know it's going to get ugly tomorrow, but this is kind of what you dream about all through November, December, January, February. You dream about a day like this.
It was really hot yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, come on. We spend all winter complaining on how cold it is, and then it gets hot, and we're like, oh, it's hot.
Can't take it anymore. Yeah, I'll take that. I would take this every day if somebody said, here's the deal you have to make. Would you take this every day? Yes.
I would, too.
Yes.
And you know, what would you give? You'd have to give something.
You.
Oh,
give
no,
you
I would not give up, Steve, for this.
Well,
not
I
me.
Just, that's a lot.
Not
we're
me.
Just, the problem is we don't do it gradually here in Chicago. It's like, you know, 69 to 99.
It's very extreme.
So there's no, you can't get acclimated.
Right, right.
But I enjoy it. It's beautiful. It's sunny. And tickets have gone on sale for Hamilton, and I'll bet they're sold out now.
I'm surprised they weren't sold out within minutes. Didn't they do a phone component? Couldn't you call them and get them?
It's an open run, though. I don't. Well, I guess
no,
it's not all that
fixed.
Open. Is it?
Yeah. It's till a
March.
Fixed run.
March 19th.
Right, but then it'll be extended without a.
But
without
that's
any
six
doubt.
Months of shows. How many days of the week does it play?
It would every day, but usually one, and then there are days where they do matinees as well. So you're probably looking at eight or nine in a week.
All right, so that's a lot of people. I know there was a huge line there. Andrea Darlis covered it.
Yeah.
We had friends that said, could you get us tickets? It's like, try first. I mean, they go on, yeah.
Did you say that to your friends?
I said, first of all, I'm going to get myself tickets before you. Second of all, they go on sale at 10 o'clock. Try Ticketmaster or ChicagoTheater.com.
Yeah.
I mean, try and do it.
This shows, though, what word of mouth does, because when was the last time you saw a Broadway play?
Oh, boy. It's been several
it's
years.
It's been a long time, right? So based on what you know about the show, which is probably what I know, which is it's about Alexander Hamilton, one of the most dynamic, exciting figures in our history.
Did you know that before?
No.
Because I have some fast facts that I think we should learn.
I want to know more about him, but it's so funny how people are really... You're doing this on faith. I mean, right?
A couple things. First of all, you know, this saved Hamilton's face on the $10 bill.
Yes, it did.
This show.
It
I mean,
did.
That is an amazing thing.
Right.
So does that mean SpongeBob is now going to be on some kind of monetary
be, yeah.
thing?
But, you know, the other thing is, and maybe SpongeBob is a bad example of it, but, you know, this takes a young art form and tells it in a very old way, or tells an old story in a very young
yeah,
way.
Yeah, right.
But the idea that you've got a hip-hop show, you know, creating this sort of fervor is... It's great.
Yeah, I guess I mean, it is.
For art in America, it's
right.
just a great thing.
Yeah, it is.
Well, pardon me for not paying attention in history class, but I didn't know this dude had so much going on.
He did, but do you remember like the first time you heard that this was going to be a show?
We laughed at it. Come on.
Oh, this will work.
Please be honest, because
no.
it was brought up in the office. And
months and months ago. Like, you guys want to have some people on from Hamilton? We're like,
why?
I don't know. I don't know.
That just shows how great
right.
we are. We're prophetic.
I think one of us said, isn't Cats still running? Can't we have some of the cats in? We love the cats. Let's bring the cats in. But this thing has revolutionized theater. Everybody's so excited about it.
Well, as I was driving in and hearing all the hubbub and hullabaloo, both the double H's I whipped out,
mm-hmm.
I thought we need to get to know a little bit more about Alexander
Hamilton. I'd like to know a lot more about him.
All right. He rose from obscurity to help build a new nation.
I thought you were going to say he rose from the dead, because that would be an even cooler play if that's how it... I don't know what happens in the show, but if that's what happens in the show, I would like to see that.
But Bill, he earned friends and enemies at just about every turn.
Isn't it always that way?
Here's a fast fact about Alexander Hamilton. He probably lied about his age. Worth making a play about you.
Wait. Did he lie saying he was older than he actually was or younger than he actually was?
We know, this according to mentalfloss.com, that Hamilton was born on January 11th. What's in doubt is the year in question. A native of Nevis, a small island in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Nope.
Hamilton repeatedly said that he was born in 1757.
Yeah.
But official Nevisian records cite 1755 as his birth
man.
Year. Why the discrepancy, you ask?
Why the discrepancy?
Well, Bill, I'll tell you. Perhaps his college search had something to do with it, according to...
Trump wants to see his birth certificate, by the way. Did you know that? He demands to see his birth certificate.
He's also banning all immigration from Nevis.
Right, until further notice.
I didn't
until
know he was born on a Caribbean island. He shouldn't have been. Stop the play.
Yeah.
Stop the playbill. According to Ron Chernow, whose biography of Hamilton inspired the Broadway show, while applying to Princeton, Hamilton may have decided to correct his real age and shed a couple of years. Prodigies aren't supposed to be overaged freshmen.
Oh, interesting.
I am only 18.
I think that's what got him kicked out of the Little League World Series as well. That kid's way too old. Plus, these are colonial times, and baseball hasn't been invented yet. This is crazy.
Ahead of his time, my friend.
Did they wear the three-pronged hat on the baseball diamond?
The tri-cornered baseball cap.
It's not pronged.
Whatever it is.
Tri-cornered.
You know what I meant.
Yeah. Is it like an electrical
See, Bill
plug?
Rolled with it. Bertrand corrected.
He's here to educate. He's here to educate.
All right, shall we take a break and learn more about Alexander Hamilton? Because I'm sure I'm not the only one who doesn't know this stuff.
I didn't know any of this stuff. All right, more with Hamilton coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
But just try to stay out of my way. Just try. I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too. I'll get you, my pretty. I'll get you, my pretty.
And, of course, Margaret Hamilton, who has a musical based on her life that is the hottest ticket on Broadway, and Chicagoans are lined up as we speak to get tickets to see Margaret Hamilton.
May I just tell you that I think, in my head, that would be a more interesting musical than just Alexander Hamilton.
No.
In the thought process, wow, that would be good. A witch musical.
Yes. I want to see that.
I think they've done that one, Wendy. Pretty sure there's been a...
at least one.
The Wiz.
Maybe two.
The Wicked.
Wicked.
Oh, yeah.
It was revised itself.
Come on, man. Yeah. Give the Founding Fathers their due. It's time to learn a little bit.
I saw Donny Osmond in the Technicolor, the Amazing
Joseph
Technicolor.
Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
I saw him in that. My mom was pretty good about taking me to theater.
Yeah.
I saw The Wiz with Diana Ross.
Yeah.
What are you laughing at?
Well, you were probably in your 30s when you saw Joseph, right?
How old were you?
No.
Younger?
Yeah. I don't know. When did it first come out?
We would have been...
We were working.
In our 20s.
All right. Well, that's when I went.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She still took me. She paid for it.
Well, that was nice.
We did it as a family thing.
Sure.
I went to see an opera. I went to see La Traviata.
That's not bad.
Didn't understand a thing.
No.
And all I wanted was pasta.
Oh. That had a strange effect on you.
All right. Well, Hamilton, do we have word yet, Steve? Has it been sold out?
I don't know that it's going to sell out like that, Wendy. I haven't seen that.
I thought it was going to be like Lollapalooza and sell out in like 60 seconds.
I imagined a scenario where people would go and buy extra tickets and then sell them on the black market, and maybe that's happening.
John Williams on Saturday talked to a guy from Playbill, the magazine, about how now there are these people with the ticket bots, the computers, and they just buy up all these tickets. And that's one of the problems that people are going to be facing today, that these computer bots are actually purchasing multiple tickets, and we're going to have to end up buying them from them.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
If you have to put in those characters to prove that you're not a robot,
right,
how does a robot do it? Because I can't even figure out what letters they are when they're all wavy gravy.
Yeah. John asked the guy that, and he said, when you can't figure it out, what do? You ask for another view, right?
It takes me about 10 times to figure out what
it is. Okay, but that's what they just keep getting it until they're... sight recognition software picks up on what the message is.
Yeah, I mean, think about what a computer does. If a computer could read that easier than we could, I would imagine.
Right.
So is that why these people have waited in line overnight? Because they don't want to deal with the aftermarket prices? So they can get them right at the box office?
Maybe that's part of it.
There's a certain level of enthusiasm among some people that's hard to understand.
Yeah, what would you wait in line for? Please tell me. Anything?
It's unrealistic, but it's impossible at this point. But if the Beatles were playing again, all four Beatles, I would wait in line for a long time for that.
No, you'd have somebody do it.
No, I would do. I
really?
Would do it.
I can't imagine waiting in line for anything. The Michael Jordan shoes that come out, people waited in line overnight.
Right.
What else? The new Apple stuff.
There's the new Apple stuff,
and it's without a guarantee. If you told me, okay, you have to wait in line 18 hours, and you're going to get specifically this. You're guaranteed this?
Yeah.
Maybe. But you're waiting in line for 18 hours, and you don't know what's going to be there
right.
when you get to the front of the line.
That's true.
No way.
There's always that guy, you know, when they do on January 1st, they do park permits to get, they always, every news team is out at the office where there's been a guy who's been in line for 3 days, and it's just him.
Moose.
There's nobody
for
else.
Camping?
It used to be a guy named Moose.
Oh, I was just going to say it didn't go over well because no one remembers his name.
No,
but.
It's a park permit badly. So he waits for a few days for the park permit. You go, you know, there's no one else in line. You could have just walked right up. You know that, right?
They changed the way they do it now. So
yeah, you could do it online now.
We don't have
right?
that story. And I'm, I'm not sure Moose is still camping, actually.
Oh.
All right. Well, things we didn't know about Alexander Hamilton. He may have lied about his age, cut off a couple of years.
2 years.
Just so he would look more successful.
Right, I guess.
I agree with that. Like I said, I'm 18.
Yes.
Hamilton dabbled in poetry.
Did he?
For a self-educated orphan, his father had abandoned his family when Hamilton was just a boy, and his mother died not long thereafter. The future founding father wrote with unbelievable polish.
There once was a man from Nevis.
On August 31st, 1772, a hurricane ravaged St. Croix.
That better be in the musical.
Teenage Hamilton.
Oh wait, there's two Hamiltons?
Great band name.
Are there two Hamiltons?
Yes,
regular
Teenage Hamilton.
Hamilton and Teenage Hamilton?
Who'd been working on the island as a clerk, described the disaster in a letter that was eventually published in the Royal Danish American Gazette, writing, do you want to hear it?
Yes.
It seemed as if a total dissolution of nature was taking place.
Oh, man.
Little did Hamilton realize that these words were about to change his life forever. Blown away by the letter, readers quickly organized a scholarship fund for the talented young scribe.
Did he sign it at the end, Teenage Hamilton? That would have been even funnier.
Before long, Alexander Hamilton found himself en route to King's College, now Columbia University in New York City.
Oh, wow.
Essay writing wasn't his only literary passion. A number of poems have also been attributed to Hamilton. When a dear friend's two-year-old daughter passed away in 1774, he eulogized her in a touching tribute called Poem on the Death of Elias Bodinet's Child. Another piece helped Hamilton win over a bride-to-be, Eliza Schuyler, as they courted.
Yep.
He went a courtin'.
Yep.
Teenage Hamilton went a courtin'.
Yes, he did.
He sent a tender sonnet to the object of his affection. Eliza liked it so much that she placed the poem in a little bag and hung it around her neck.
That's what kids hardly ever do anymore, is send each other tender sonnets. I'm surprised that went out of style.
I am too.
Kevin, you ever send your fiance a tender sonnet?
There's an app for that, actually.
Yeah, there's an app that does that.
It's called Tinder.
The last letter that George Washington ever wrote was addressed to Hamilton.
Oh, wow.
He founded the New York Post.
Pick up milk. That's what it says. Dear Teenage Hamilton, completely out of milk and cheese.
And I need all that, what's in milk that's good for teeth and bones, because George Washington didn't have great teeth, did
he? It's hard to believe with this level of dialogue that you guys aren't interested in the play.
He founded the New York Post.
I didn't know that.
His eldest son died in a duel. This
that
is
was
interesting.
Back then.
Well, he was in a duel, right, with Aaron Burr.
Yes. Yep. They occasionally collaborated, and
he invented dual speakers. Did you know that?
I did not know
he
that.
He did. He had a stereo store.
The oldest unit, what was it called?
Hamilton speakers.
The oldest unit in the United States Army.
That's not nice. He seems like a nice man.
No, the oldest unit in the United States Army is Hamilton's.
Oh.
Let me finish the sentence.
I'm sorry.
It's believed that he authored most of the Federalist Papers.
Yeah, I knew that part.
And I think that's all we know. Theodore Roosevelt was a big fan of his.
Why would that be?
I've never heard him called
Telescope Teddy. Because he was always spying on his neighbors when he was in the White House.
Rear Window was inspired by Theodore Roosevelt.
Come on, Mrs. Jackson, a little to the left.
Oh. You know, though, Teddy Bear was named after him.
Yeah, after Teddy Roosevelt.
But I never heard Telescope Teddy. He was fascinated by all things Hamilton.
He wanted tickets to the play so badly, and they're like, they're not going to write this play for another 130 years. Be patient. I want to see it so badly.
And he's going to have to share the $10 bill soon.
Share it? I think they're giving it. I think he gets to keep it, I think.
Well, but I think they're going to put some ladies on the back or something like that.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah, that's right, because originally they were going to get rid of it. And then because of this play, The newfangled $10 bill slated for a 2020 release. And
that's the funniest part of this, and Steve brought it up at the beginning, is that because of the popularity of this play, this Broadway musical, he gets to stay on the $10 bill. If there's no play about him,
right,
he's gone.
And not only is he gone if there's no play about him, you know, the $10 bill was so many people's only reminder that there was a him.
Right.
So he might have sort of, you know, disappeared from our collective memory.
Isn't that amazing?
Not completely, obviously.
The weirdest part, Steve, though, is that a generation ago when they took Felix and Oscar off the 20, it mattered not that they had a Broadway play.
Well, that's because there were two of them.
Yeah, I guess maybe that plays into it.
But, you know, think of it. Art matters. I think it's very exciting.
It is exciting.
You know, it matters. It really makes a difference.
It does. There's no doubt about that.
All right, and just so
we
can clarify this real quickly, the new $10 bill will celebrate the history of the women's suffrage movement and feature images of Lucretia Mott.
Nice.
Sojourner Truth.
Yeah.
Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Alice Paul alongside the Treasury Building. The front of the new $10 bill will remain with the portrait of Alexander Hamilton.
All right.
So he does have to share it, but sharing's better than getting booted.
Right, with four ladies. He's very happy about that. He's the luckiest of all patriots. All right, we'll take that, Tom Brady.
I was going to continue the sonnet there, but I better not.
No, don't. All right, we need to take a break. Steve has the news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill F., and it's Wendy Snyder. And if you want to be a part of this, you can. You can either just listen, or you can participate at 312-981-7200. Whatever you're comfortable with. Wendy, did you see this? There may or may not be a sea monster on Google Earth. I know that seems vague to say that there may be or there may not be. You probably already assumed that. But let me read you the story. This is out of England. A sea monster has been spotted on Google Earth near Antarctica, and it has driven people into a frenzy as they try to figure out exactly what it is. Is it a kraken, they want to know? Or something less terrifying.
What is a kraken? I love this joke.
A kraken was in both the book and the movie Clash of the Titans. The kraken was the giant sea monster.
So like Nessie, but bigger and meaner?
Yeah, way bigger and way meaner. Release the kraken. Did you ever hear that phrase? Release the kraken?
No.
Scott Waring of UFO Sighting Daily thinks that it could be a sea monster. That's unusual for the guy who runs UFO Sighting Daily to think it's probably a sea monster. I would not have guessed that he would think that.
All right, this makes a lot of sense because it's a rock.
It is. Spoiler alert, it is
a general. Oh, it is?
It is, but that's not what Scott Waring from UFO Sighting Daily says. Here's a quote from him, from Scott Waring. This looks like the Kraken. I used Google Ruler, and it says that it is 30 meters from head to toe. That's pretty big. That's over 100 feet. But the end looks like the mid area of a giant squid, which means it could be 60 or more meters long with tentacles. Now, he's just elaborating on this.
I know.
They're not showing any of this in the Google Earth picture.
It looks like, honestly, nothing but a rock. Maybe it looks like the head of a giant whale coming out of the water. Maybe. But you wouldn't think for a minute. I see no tentacles.
But doesn't this show you how people want so badly to believe that this sort of thing exists? This guy is sure that it's not just a sea monster, but the Kraken from Clash of the Titans. But when you and I see it, we go, or it's a rock. And it is. It's a rock.
Listen, why do you want this to be true? A giant sea monster?
I don't know.
Where's
Sigmund? Sigmund the sea monster. A Kraken, it says here, is a mythical tentacled monster known in tales of the sea for drowning people and ships. The picture that we're talking about was taken near Deception Island.
Well, there you go.
I think the name couldn't be more accurate. It's located in the South Shetlands, where they make ponies, by the way. That's their number.
They did make ponies, but this kraken ate all the ponies.
Right.
It's a nice afternoon treat.
All the pony factories have closed out of fear. Fear-mongering. That's what Scott Waring is doing. The picture was taken near Deception Island in the South Shetlands and appears to show a fin. Some think it could be the Loch Ness Monster. Why would it be the Loch Ness? Why would the Loch Ness Monster leave its loch?
She got lost.
Maybe.
She got lost.
Maybe. But the Loch Ness Monster, like people who are into that, believe that it is in the Loch Ness in Scotland, not in the South Shetlands at Deception Island. They can't just relocate.
Well, they can swim.
Yeah, but I don't think those bodies, well, I guess it's possible.
And
but I don't
they
know
can crawl
are,
on land a little bit
can
to
they do
get
that?
To a new body of water.
I didn't know that. All right.
I want to believe more than anything in UFOs. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah.
This does not look like...
No, it looks like a giant rock.
And I'm sorry, I spoiled it. It looked like a rock.
But I just love how the guys like Scott Waring of UFO Sighting Daily goes, well, clearly this is a kraken. This is a giant sea monster. Some have a more rational explanation for the strange object. We share our planet with some huge sea creatures, but not krakens, so it is probably more plausible that this image is a blue whale or a similarly large animal. It's not, it's a rock. I am a rock. I am an island.
But your radio rolls you?
Yes. This won't stop conspiracy theorists saying that it is definitely a UFO full of aliens.
Oh, please.
I know. Mysterious UFO sightings around the world. Oh, sorry, that's a separate thing. Because we have better quality photography equipment and don't have to rely on word of mouth from scared sailors, sightings of krakens and other sea monsters have gone down.
Is that why it's gone down?
That's the primary reason. Remember when you were a kid and a week didn't go by that somebody didn't go, I just spotted me a kraken. When was the last time somebody told you that? Hi, Howie. How are things? Oh, things are not good, Wendy. I just spotted me a kraken. It's been forever since any of my friends.
I never even heard that word.
A kraken. You never had a crack in your windshield? However, grainy satellite images often still show images with the more paranoid minds can mistake for ships or monsters from outer space. Now, here's another story on the same exact subject, which 100% proves that it's just a giant rock. It's something that they call Sail Rock, which is a big giant rock in the South Shetlands.
So somebody's already aware of it?
Yeah. It's been there forever.
Why didn't somebody tell the UFO dude?
I don't know. I think they just wanted to see how he'd react.
It broke the internet. I mean, everybody was looking at
it. People were so excited they found a kraken. The one I like, this is my favorite. Of the mythical beasts, can I tell you what my favorite
Please
is?
Please do.
The chupacabra, hands down.
Love it. My favorite.
I love the chupacabra. Love it. And once Trump builds the wall, we won't get them in the United States anymore. They'll only be in Mexico, so we'll lose out on the chupacabras.
Damn Trump.
I know.
He's That's ruining a better everything. Name than its like American translation, which is goat sucker.
It is goat sucker. Yeah, that's what chupacabra means.
Let's leave it in chupacabra
it's
form.
It's better for chupacabra. Yeah, it's better for us that way. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then it is Tech Tuesday. We'll talk to Ashley Escathan, find out what's going on in the world of technology. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Say one more time.
Jaguar.
That's pretty good. Ashley Escathan is here, senior editor at CNET TV and host of Tomorrow Daily. Go to CNET.com for all your Ashley Escathan needs. Ashley, we were just talking about Hamilton tickets, and they have these robots now. Like, if you're on the phone waiting to try to get tickets, they've created some sort of a robot that can get tickets over the phone, over the computer. How is that possible that a robot can read the computer code when humans like us can't read that six-digit number that's all kind of blurry?
I've often wondered that very same thing.
Isn't that crazy?
How can robots read these captchas? I can't even read them. You know, New York just passed a bill outlawing the bot for tickets.
Oh, is that true?
It's pretty interesting. Yeah, I think it was yesterday they passed a law saying no more state of New York, no more using bots. But the thing is it doesn't really... It doesn't really work in the grand scheme of things because, of course, every state around New York can still use bots.
Right, right.
Yeah, but if they outlawed it in New York, the tickets for Hamilton are already purchased. Here in Chicago, that's the big scare today because they went on sale at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, and I'm sure they were gone right away. And that's a pretty big, it's one of those really tough issues that ticket sellers try to handle, but then you kind of have the problem of, you know, Ticketmaster owning StubHub, which is a reseller outlet. And, you know, it's kind of a very...
It's incestuous.
...strange situation. Yeah, it's very incestuous. And they do make money off of those higher-priced tickets. And so there is some incentive for them to sell out shows and then have people resell them on StubHub. It's all very not fair, I think, to anybody wanting to go to a show.
Well, now I understand why the lines were so long, because you physically want to do it yourself and not rely on a phone or a computer to get your tickets. Right. I get it now.
Right. And I mean, if you have one, if you have half a second of lag, you know, on your, if your internet connection is just barely slower than a robot, then, which usually in most cases is, then you miss out. It's a real bummer.
Yep. No question about it. Ashley, tell us about this airplane, the Solar Impulse. It's pretty significant when it comes to air travel. Please explain.
Yeah, I love the Solar Impulse, too. So it's completing the second-to-last leg of its trip right now. It's flying from New York to Spain. And this is a plane that actually started flying around the world last year, in March of last year. It had a nine-month-long detour. It had to take a break in Hawaii for 9 months, which, I mean, I don't think any of us would complain about.
No. But,
is that what the crew told you? We have to take a nine-month break here.
Maui's the only place we could possibly do this.
Conveniently, they broke down in Hawaii, right? That's exactly where you want to break down. So they had a nine-month break. Now they're flying again. This is a plane that is entirely solar-powered. So there are over 17,000 tiles on the top of this plane. It is solar-powered. It charges up, collects energy, and then that energy is used to power the propellers. It's pretty impressive and a really big step forward in terms of electric airplanes. I mean, we've seen electric cars really come to the forefront, and those are going to start becoming more and more prevalent now with Tesla and BMW and other manufacturers really getting into higher powered and longer range electric cars. And I think they're really starting to look into how we can do that for the skies as well. So electric Solar Impulse 2, it's really exciting.
I don't mean to be a pessimist. I'm more of a scaredy cat. Do they have like a real engine in case something should fail on the solar powered tiles on the top of the plane?
I believe there are fail safes, but usually the solar tiles also collect and store energy as well. So if they were to fly, they would know, hey, we're running. It's just like fuel. Hey, we're running low on range. We're going to have to land and charge up a little bit.
That's pretty cool.
That's very cool. Do we know realistically, Ashley, when this will become more prevalent? Are we looking at 5, 10, 15 years down the road?
Yeah, I would. If I had to guess, I would say obviously obviously airplanes are a lot more complicated in a lot of ways, including scale, than cars. And so but I do think that once we start seeing electric cars become more prevalent in society and people more comfortable with electric cars, I think that there'll be a bigger interest, a public interest in electric airplanes and other forms of transportation, maybe boats, things like that. And I think that there'll be a greater sort of push forward to make them more accessible in society. So I would like to hope and think that within the next 5 to 10 years, we'll see a lot more of that.
Now, speaking of electric cars, Bill, you have loved the Tesla.
Very much so, yeah.
And there is a little hidden feature that a lot of people don't know about. Explain that to us, Ashley.
Well, Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, tweeted the other day that Tesla definitely does not recommend this for any Tesla owner, but the Tesla Model S can be used as a boat for a very short period of time.
Wow, really?
Yeah. He mentioned that the wheels would be the thrust. You'd be able to move forward a little bit. And there was talk about a somebody in Russia who used the Model S to kind of get through a flooded area. And so he had said, yeah, we can. The car is pretty well sealed. It will float for a very short amount of time. But we absolutely do not recommend trying it. Like, do not try it.
Was this an accident, or was this something as they were developing it, they thought, well, let's just make it the capability to be a boat if it needs to be a boat? How did this happen?
I think it's probably somewhere in between where it was an unintentional feature where they designed the car in such a way that they said, huh, well, I mean, you know, you could probably maybe even make it float. Like, you know what I mean? And so, and then it turned out that was the case.
Remember when you could use... There was a time where you could use a Yugo as a doorstop. Do you remember that?
I think you can still do that, right?
Yeah, you can.
Hey, speaking of Yugos, do you remember the Le Car by Renault?
Yeah, absolutely.
They haven't been made in a long time, but now Renault is doing something cool with their electric cars. Why don't you explain this?
I love this. So one of the inherent issues with having electric vehicles is, where do you charge if you're out and about? How do you find stations? I mean, there are apps that help you find them, but they are a little more few and far between than I think electric car companies would like. So Renault in Sweden has launched LBMB, so not Airbnb, but LBMB, and it's electrical. So it's an electrical outlet that they're allowing people to install to allow people who have electric cars to say, oh, well, I'm just going to stop at this person's house and charge up for a little bit. And the person who owns the charger can say, can dictate how much the charging will cost. And all of the other sort of terms, just like an Airbnb, but instead of renting out a house, you're renting out electricity for a little bit.
Depends how low the power is. If somebody was really desperate, I'd say it was $1,000 a minute.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if it's underneath 5% battery, I'd like the surge pricing, just like Uber. I have surge pricing.
Supply and demand. It's always supply and demand. Remind me,
that's
Ashley,
right.
Renault, as Wendy said, was a very... never a powerhouse in the car industry here in the United States, but they were always a presence in Europe and other parts of the world, even though they kind of just vanished here, right?
Sure, yeah. And they're very, so in Sweden, they're this initiative, which I find very interesting, they were saying, you know, in Sweden, this is sort of a very sharing-friendly economy, so this is, they feel that's a market that would really kind of pick up on that trend and actually really use the service as opposed to, you know, here in the States, people might be a lot more reluctant to use a service like that. But there are, you know, there are possibilities. I mean, Tesla is building the Powerwall where you're able to store electricity and potentially sell it back to the grid. And also, you're going to be able to do that with the BMW i3's old batteries. They're talking about potentially making those or converting those into batteries that you can actually keep in your home, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. They've come a long way, and they're going to go even farther. Something that I'm a little afraid of on the internet, way back when, before you could look up medical symptoms, I'm a big hypochondriac, so is my sister. It was a very lovely Christmas gift she gave me one year, the Mayo Clinic's book of symptoms. It's about 10 phone books thick.
That's a great gift.
And all my friends would call me and say, hey, you know, Wendy, what's going on? Here are my symptoms. Then you have WebMD, but now Google's jumping in on this. You have to be careful what you search for when you have a symptom, don't you?
I like to think you should just never search for your symptoms because it's always worst case scenario. It's always, especially between the hours of, let's say, 11 and 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's always the worst. Like you can't search for stuff. But Google is doing this cool thing where they are aggregating with their knowledge graph, and they're aggregating answers and symptoms from the Mayo Clinic, WebMD, and other sort of accepted sources of symptoms and causes. And they are on their apps, their iOS and Android apps, and their mobile website, Google's mobile website. If you say, my elbow hurts, it will use Knowledge Graph to pull up a list of potential causes for that. So you can sort of maybe get an idea of what might be going on, but Google still says you should absolutely still go see a doctor. It's not a substitute for any kind of actual real medical advice from a medical professional like Dr. Wendy here.
Right. I can help you. I can give you my cell phone number. You can call me. Although this new system with Google's mobile app is the true meaning of Google Doc, I believe.
Indeed. Yeah, Google Doc. I think that's why they changed it to Google Drive so they could use this and call it Google Doc. I love it, actually. I think we should actually just say you're welcome to Google for giving them that.
I know. Kevin, you should send Google a little tape of the show, and Ashley and Bill and me, we should all get credit.
I like it.
Yeah.
What's coming up on Tomorrow Daily, Ashley?
Yesterday we talked about an agriculture drone in Japan that seeks out, using infrared and thermal cameras, pests in crops. And instead of blanketing an entire crop in pesticides and chemicals, it actually will seek out a bug, and I believe it can recognize around 50 different types of pests. It will find the bug and then deliver a targeted drone strike of chemicals directly at the bug so that it's not coating the entire crop in pesticides, which is really cool.
And if that bug is a bee, it would actually be a drone, wouldn't it?
It would be.
How about that?
This is probably an ignorant question, but why aren't we figuring out some way to have military do this?
I think it's a lot harder when it's people, because people all look like each other, generally speaking. We all look like humans. And then, you know, with pests, you're able to really specifically say, this is, you know, a moth that eats
Right. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, to me, all bugs pretty much look alike. There are some with wings. There are some with three segments.
But
that's all different. There's not really a lot of people walking around with three segments.
Yeah, thankfully.
All right, good point.
That's the best news all day so far, Ashley. It really is. Ashley, thank you. We appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you. You guys, too.
That's Ashley Iskay, the senior editor over at CNET TV, host of Tomorrow Daily. Go to CNET.com. Everything's there. We'll take a quick break. Then Steve has the news. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And there has been lots of talk these days about kids, teenagers specifically. It's not necessarily our opinion. But, Bill, you hear other people saying, you know, what's wrong with teenagers today?
These kids today.
They're rude.
You have to say it that way.
They're spoiled.
Right.
They have this
self-obsessed.
Entitled. A new study actually reveals that teens today are 40% less empathetic than they were 30 years ago, and we're about to find out why. On the line with us right now is Dr. Michelle Borba, and nice to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. You too.
Why does it seem that more teens today don't give a care about anybody else?
Well, luckily it isn't all of them because there's a lot of good kids out there. But we are concerned about a trend that just in the last 30 years, there's been a 40% drop in empathy. And it's a combination of factors. I think first is that they're more and more plugged in and you don't learn empathy facing a screen. You have to do face-to-face connection. Second, parenting styles have really kind of changed. I think a lot of it because of the no child left untested phase. So we
no child left what?
Untested. It was the constant testing, and that was a whole era where all emphasis went on the achievement scores and the SAT scores, and they still are, to the admissions, where in reality what we did is we scheduled our kids, and we've seen a tremendous drop in just unscheduled play, and play is another piece where kids learn empathy 101. Celebrities became more and more the kids' role models, and you learn empathy by looking up to people you admire. 10 years ago, when we asked kids, who do you want to be when you grow up, it was a doctor or a leader or a fireman, and right now it's a celebrity or an NFL player. So it's not one thing. It's just knowing that there is a new change in culture. You can't change the culture, but you still can do what we all want to do best is raise good kids. And I think what seems to be lying a little dormant that we need to tune up a notch is empathy 101.
Michelle, getting on your subject of celebrities, because of reality television, and I'll call it the Kardashian factor, when kids are seeing people who are so self-obsessed and think that the whole world revolves around them, like the Kardashians seem to believe, that's going to leave a mark on a kid, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because we're already seeing the biggest mark it's leaving, unfortunately, is with our tween girls, and why more and more of them are thinking that it's what I look like matters more than who I am. But even that said, what I've done in On Selfie is just look at all of the latest research saying, no matter what, we can really turn this around. One of the most interesting strategies on flipping that paradigm is not only presenting kids with good role models. I don't care if it's Great Aunt Sally or the neighbor next door, or just looking through the newspaper and cut out examples of fabulous kids. They're always hidden on the back page of the newspapers, but they're incredible stories about inspiring kids. Start sharing those with children. A camp study was also done when they brought in self-obsessed kids, tweens, and all they began to do is praise them for qualities from the inside out. They were deserved qualities, but they were character-driven, like maybe it's a child's tenacity or that one was really respectful, and then they told them why. What began to happen is very slowly, after just a certain amount of time at that camp, the self-absorption went down because kids began to see themselves in a different positive light. It's just revamping things so kids began to see themselves as we, not me.
What a great concept. The book that Dr. Michelle Borba has written is called Unselfie, Why Empathetic Kids Succeed in Our All About Me World. And it is pretty funny to watch teenagers walk down Michigan Avenue out in front of the Allstate Showcase studio. They're in a group. They're maybe walking to the beach, and they're all really loud and obnoxious and taking selfies every other step. And it cracks me up to watch that.
Yeah.
It's like you have to document everything these days.
Yeah, they're so cute. But the only thing we're worried about, too, is that they're also a generation, and rightly so, the Internet's going to stay. It's not going away. But they'd rather text than talk. And what we do know is the seeds of empathy. I've identified 9 habits that are crucial. Habit number 1 is emotional literacy. It's really hard to feel for another human being unless you can recognize that, how that person's feeling by either their voice tone or their posture or their facial expressions. And too often what they're doing is they're relying on emojis in order to figure out emotional training. Particularly, unfortunately, our boys. We're talking far more emotions with our daughters from a very early age. So it's just little things to tweak so that we end up raising who we want to raise as the kid who we hope is going to be able to thrive and survive out there in the real world.
Michelle, empathy is a learned behavior, right? It's not innate. That's something that you pick up from your surroundings, correct?
Yeah. What the new research is saying is that you are hardwired for it. That's the good news. Our children arrive with it. But unless we nurture it, it lies dormant. And that's the biggest problem. I think, first of all, many parents are assuming that it's just a temperament, or girls are maybe better at it than boys, or it's not something that you necessarily have to focus on. And as a result, I think that's one issue why just the culture is changing and we're not tuning it up nearly enough. I mean, I even tell parents, just check your messages when your kids come walking in the door. So often our first question is, what did you get, or how was the test, as opposed to, you know, how are you doing with your friends, or what's the kind deed that you saw today? As a result, what happens is those messages really start to build up. They did a fascinating study at Harvard of thousands of kids. When they asked them, how important do you think for in your own home that your parents thought you should care, only 20% of kids said that they thought their parents did. Oh. Now, that isn't true.
20%?
20%.
Oh, no.
It was all on the opposite side. It was far more important than my kids, but that my mom thinks that I need to get the test for. Well, yes, we want our kids to be smart, but I know we want them to be nice, and it just means we need to just tune it up a little more. There's over 300 ideas in that book. I don't care what you choose, but choose a couple of them that matter most to you and keep doing that, because we now know that empathy is a key factor to our children's success. It's a job employability factor that's very high. Businesses are looking for kids who can step into the shoes of the client. But it's also the seeds of healthy relationships, so that's really going to help your child be what you really want, is the happier kid.
You know, I have things to learn every day, and anybody who's a parent who says, oh, I'm the best parent ever, I don't need to learn anything, is lying. And when you say, ask them, how was your day, not did you make it to summer school, did you do your homework, I feel in this era of double working parents, you know, we each have a job, we come home, we don't have a lot of downtime, so we try to get to the agenda right away, like, hey, did you finish your homework for summer school, when are you finished? It just ruins everything. Like, today I'm going to make an active effort when my teenage boys come home to go, hey, how was your day?
And you're going to go, whoa.
Who are you?
All right, I'm not that bad, Dr. Borba.
No, it's not. But you nailed something. Every parent is in the same agenda. We are so much of a to-do list with so struggling to do so much. And what we're also dealing with as a big concern is that we've never seen such higher stress levels of our kids. When stress builds, empathy wanes because you're in survival mode, which is why one of the key habits on selfie is self-regulation. Maybe during the summer, one of the easiest ones on that is just deep breathing. They've actually discovered that, my gosh, Navy SEALs, that's what they do to keep fear at bay. So teach your kids to slow deep breaths and do it as a family. In fact, any of these strategies are so easy. You don't have to say, okay, now it's 6 o'clock, let's do empathy building. But if you find a couple of them and you just make them into little routines and rituals, kids like them and they become a habit that your child's going to be able to do without you. And that's what you're really wanting.
Dr. Michelle Borba's book is called Unselfie, Why Empathetic Kids Succeed in Our All About Me World. We have callers on hold. We're at 312-981-7200. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to those questions next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are talking about why we need empathetic kids and how we can help get our kids to be more empathetic. Dr. Michelle Borba on the line with us. She's an educational psychologist, parenting, bullying, and character expert, and her new book is called Unselfie, Why Empathetic Kids Succeed in Our All About Me World. During the break, Dr. Michelle, somebody texted, today our son is doing nothing but enjoying some time relaxing, napping, eating, as the kids today just run and run and run, but not today. They're letting him take the day off. You got to do that once in a while, don't you?
Oh, I am cheering up and down. Yay, Mom. Yes, because they need downtime, don't we all?
Yes.
But they need to decompress. And what we're finding is that many of our kids are not only not knowing how to decompress, but not even enjoying their own company. So, yay.
All right. Well, that's good.
That's a good thing.
We have a listener, Mark, who has a question for you. Mark, this is Dr. Michelle Borba.
Well, actually, it's not a question. In what used to be what's now Asperger's spectrum, which used to have one with Asperger's syndrome and used to have high functioning Asperger, what's beneficial is the fact you're very sensory. The major downside is the lack of empathy. You're not wired for it, as you well know. And the thing is, these kids have a tremendous difficulty building relationships because they can't have eye contact. They're always looking away, and other kids think it's like, what, they can't look at me? So they end up having a lot of social difficulties because of that.
And a lot of people don't understand that, Mark. You know.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. And if it's identified early, then they can be worked with and educated in the things you've got to look for. I mean, I didn't discover it till I was 60. I mean, I'm a pharmacist, and I've developed a lot of empathy through the years. I mean, I can cry from a TV show. But I finally understand my mother because she has empathy for nothing whatsoever, and difficulty with friendships and everything else, and I'm grateful that I evolved. But a lot of the kids, because I deal with as pharmacists, and I also have a psych background from University of Illinois, I deal with people with depression, anxiety, bipolar, with these issues all the time, and I try to work with them, not just from the pharmaceutical aspect, but a counseling aspect to help them. And I have parents that have brought in their kids who have been identified with high-functioning Asperger, to let them be aware you can be successful, but the things you need to acquire to really break down those boundaries that keep you from having friendship success and future success.
Dr. Michelle, would you like to address this?
Most people, but not in everybody.
That's true. It is inborn in most people, but on the autism spectrum, sometimes that is just not part of how they're wired, as you mentioned, Mark. Dr. Borba?
Well, I'm agreeing with what Mark's saying. My first teaching career, I was a former special ed teacher, and the first 3 years I taught were with children, with autistic children. And it was a big piece to make sure that I learned perspective taking to get into their shoes. We also were doing a lot of things at UCLA, teaching to help them learn social skills. And one of the things is actually teaching them by looking in mirrors over and over again to keep their head up, or at least starting with strong body language. In fact, if there's one tip I could tell any parent, my background is also bullying prevention. We look at thousands and thousands of hours of kids, of videos of children out on a playground most likely to be bullied, and the number one sign is a child using what's called wimpy body language. So if we can at least tell them to hold their head up. Eye contact is very tough for some kids. Looking at the back of a dot behind the person, or for some kids, it could be with learning disabilities, the dot be right at the bridge of the person's nose, at least getting them to hold their head up, because I'm also convinced that empathy is the best antidote we have to bullying. Mobilizing the compassion of 25% of kids on a school campus, 85%, excuse me, who aren't the bully, aren't the victim, but are bystanders. And there's phenomenal work we can do. In fact, Chapter 8 in Unselfie is all about how to teach moral courage and bystander skills, so we mobilize kids who can step in and help kids who are more likely to be picked on and victimized.
That's really interesting, Dr. Borba. And Mark, thank you for contributing. We really appreciate it, and you might want to check out this book.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. You mentioned that to hold your head up and stuff, it's like a bully is going to, just like an animal, you're going to look for someone who is...
the weakest lamb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vulnerable. Vulnerable.
That's
remember
it.
What bullies really are like. There's all different reasons for bullies, so I don't want to do a carte blanche cookie cutter approach, but bullies very often are looking for kids who are more vulnerable by nature. So the first step that I teach parents as a step is, teach your child, always look at the color of the talker's eyes. Now, there's two reasons. Number one, you can start that at age two. It helps your child learn to tune in. For some kids, the look in the colored eyes, as Mark just said, is going to be next to impossible. So that's the bridge of the nose or behind, or at least starting to use strong body language. But the other thing it does is that the first habit of empathy is emotional literacy. That also helps kids, particularly a plugged-in generation, 7.5 hours a day, says Common Sense Media, is the average time our kids are now plugging in, to put down the device and look at the other person so that you can start learning emotional literacy.
And, you know, a lot of the bullying starts, they talk about cyberbullying, but we get texts in here every day and yes, you have someone's phone number and technically you could call them back, but it's easier to slam someone when you're not looking them in the eye face to face.
Exactly. That's why we're finding that cyberbullying is going up a notch. But we also know something, that bullying by nature is a relationship problem. And most research is still telling us that it starts on the playground or face to face, then finally gets to the point where the kid realizes, okay, I can do it anywhere and anywhere, and it's just a lot easier electronically. We're now looking at about 20% of even our kindergartners engaging in mean kind of behavior patterns. That's scary, because all of that is learned. And the more engaged you are in mean behaviors, it means that you start adopting those behavior patterns and empathy starts to go down. It just means collectively as a group of adults, we need to step in and say, no, that's not how we act. I expect better of you. I'm disappointed in that. Let's redo it because you're a caring person.
And
then we walk them through and say, let's do it again.
I can't wait to read this book. It's called Unselfie, Why Empathetic Kids Succeed in Our All About Me World. Her name is Dr. Michelle Borba. You can go to Michelle with one or two L's.
One L. Thank you.
MichelleBorba.com. And put yourself in someone else's shoes. Not literally, because they might not be your style.
Sure.
But we need to be more empathetic. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Borba. We'll take a quick break. Kim Gordon has the news. And then more of us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Please touch this.
That sounds desperate.
Please touch this.
That is the most desperate thing in the world of all time. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Levin, the very desperate Wendy Snyder. You want to jump in? Do it quick.
Please jump in.
312-981-7200. There was a trend that I think started last week, and it continues today, or last night anyway. I showed you a picture last week. We didn't talk about this on air, but I showed you a picture of J.K. Simmons, who I think, I guess most people would probably know him from Whiplash,
Yeah. Right?
Or maybe as...
Not My Tempo.
Right. If you've not seen Whiplash...
Please do.
It's really, really good, and he's fantastic in it. He plays the meanest music teacher in the history of the world.
Can I tell you something, though, very briefly as a little sidebar?
Yeah.
My son Dylan played the drums until he saw that movie, and I just realized that's when he stopped playing the drums.
I could see that.
But he wants to start it again.
It's very
intimidating. It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was a picture of J.K. Simmons all over the place a week ago because he's in a movie called Justice League. He's not in it yet. It's not out yet. And Justice League is all the best DC heroes together. Batman, Superman, Aquaman... the Green Lantern, and Potsy from Happy Days. So he's in this movie.
He will
sing
in it.
Yeah, he will sing in it. He was in the news because they showed him working out, and he doesn't just have muscles. His muscles have muscles. He's 61 years old, and he is ripped like crazy.
He was never in shape like this.
He's in good shape, but not like this.
He was lean.
Yeah.
That's what I will say.
Right.
I never saw bulging muscles
right. And
veins before.
No, they showed him, and he's working out, and he's got a tank top on, and he's
Wouldn't
just
you wear a tank top if you had guns like that?
Nonstop. That's all I would wear is tank tops.
Let me rephrase that. You should wear a tank
should
top.
Should wear tank tops.
With guns like that.
I definitely should. The Senate actually yesterday made no motion whatsoever to ban the guns that I have on my arms.
Good one. And I will tell you this, in compliments to you.
Yes.
When you wore those hideous shorts the other day, which I thought you were supposed to...
The forbidden pants?
Yes.
Yes.
I like to call them hideous shorts. You called them something
they
different.
They are the forbidden pants.
Your daughters were supposed to dress you this week.
Right. A problem arose from that because they wanted to take me shopping over the weekend and get me new clothes so that I could show them off like what they chose for me this week. But
you didn't have time to shop?
There was no time over the weekend. But
will
in
you
the
do
near
it
future. Yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
Summer?
In the future, without a doubt, they will take me shopping. Whatever they pick for me, I will wear for a week,
okay.
Monday through Friday.
All right. Getting back to the shorts.
Yes.
When you wore them,
yes.
You said to me, I haven't worn these in how many years?
Over 15 years, maybe more.
And they were really baggy on you. They were loose. You needed a belt for the first time.
Yeah.
Kudos to you.
Yeah.
And you are, honestly, I worked with you over 20 years ago,
uh-huh.
And you're in better shape now than you were then. You look younger, if that's possible.
Well, thank you.
And my darn husband is the same thing. He is in the best shape he's ever been. So J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons.
It's possible.
It
you
is,
know what I mean?
He's 61 years old. And seriously,
wow.
If you didn't see his... This sounds terrible. I know as I'm saying it, I'm wording this incorrectly. But if you didn't see his face, you only saw his body, you'd go, well, there's a guy who's probably in his mid-30s. He's in that great a shape. All you see is just incredible
it's
muscle.
Ripped.
And he's playing Commissioner Gordon, who doesn't even need to be big and strong. If you watch any incarnation of Batman, there's never been a muscular Commissioner Gordon, really.
Are you sure he's not playing Batman?
He could be playing Batman. He looks great. All right, now here's the reason I bring this up. I'm just now getting over J.K. Simmons. I keep wanting to say J.K. Rowling because when we told Kevin about this, he goes, oh, yeah, J.K. Simmons, that's the guy who writes the Harry Potter books. But that's J.K. Rowling, and they should get married because that would be funny if J.K. married J.K. I've already carved that on trees. All right.
Keep your fingers crossed.
Right. I'm hoping it happens. All right. So he was last week's big buff celebrity, but then last night I'm on the internet, and I see somebody else who I didn't expect to have gigantic, humongous muscles. And it doesn't make sense that this guy is so ripped. I'm trying to think of what clue I can give you. I'll give you this clue because the pictures of him were at, I think it was game 7 of the NBA championship, but it might have been game 5 or 6.
Jack Nicholson.
No, it's not. That'd be cool.
That'd be funny.
That would be excellent. That'd be excellent. It was not him. What else can I tell you about him? Stand-up comic. He's a stand-up comic.
A good one?
Yeah, he's very funny. Very, very funny.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Nope. What's the deal with my muscles? Where did these come from?
I so wish it was him.
I was never this strong.
I ripped through my puffy shirt.
I'm like the Hulk's brother, Jerry Hulk. No, it is not. It is not Jerry Seinfeld.
But I'm glad I said it because that was some great material.
Did you enjoy that?
All right, give me one more hint.
I'll give you. I think this will tip it in. He had a lot of controversy about 5 years ago. A lot of controversy when he just kind of vanished.
Kramer.
No, it's not Kramer. That's a great guess. That's a great guess. Do you want me to tell you who
it
is?
Yeah, I don't know.
Dave Chappelle. And I'm going to show you a picture, and then we'll put it on our Facebook page. Because if you said to me, oh, wait till you see Dave Chappelle, this guy is incredibly muscular and ripped, I would laugh, and I'd go, no, he's not. He's Dave Chappelle. He's a skinny kid. Here's a picture of him at the NBA game the other day.
That is not him.
That's Dave Chappelle. That is absolutely him.
Holy
Look at his arms. They're like five times the size of what his arms used to be. Every part of him. Like,
he looks like Frank Thomas now.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Body-wise, he looks like... Because Frank Thomas is packing a punch.
Yeah.
And he's big.
Yeah.
And he's muscular.
Would you think the picture I just showed you, and it'll
no.
be on our Facebook page in a few minutes, that you go, that can't be Dave Chappelle.
It's up there now. Go look at it,
they
people.
They put him in a machine to make him look five times the size of his normal self. I don't know what these guys are doing, him and J.K. Rowling.
Are they taking supplements, maybe?
I don't know.
Because how can you... I mean,
I don't know. Muscle milk. I bet it's that muscle milk.
That doesn't work that well.
It works within minutes. I don't know what he's doing. I work out 3 times a week. And on my best day, I wasn't a fraction. And Dave Chappelle was skinnier than me. And now he looks like a like a muscular person.
I don't think your body just does that. I mean, you can
something's
work out.
Up, right?
I know.
Something's got to be
up. I don't care,
up.
But, you know, for the kids today, tell the truth.
This is going to keep them out of the Comedy Hall of Fame. They won't put him in there.
They drug test you for that?
Yeah.
No one would be in it then.
I know. It'd be empty.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy when you see a guy like I've known Dave, I don't know him in person, but I've known of his work for 20 years. And when I think of him, he's just a skinny guy. He's not muscular, but he's not like that. And J.K. Simmons is the same way. Kind of a slight guy.
Almost twerpy.
Yeah.
And
wouldn't call him that now.
Oh,
he'd kick sand in my face. He'd bring sand, put it on the floor and then kick it in my face.
He'd kick the whole beach in your face.
No.
All right, well, something's up with that, people, because your body type is your body type, and you can improve it immensely, but
right.
It just seems like you can't improve it that much. Ask
well,
Sammy
not
Sosa.
That quickly.
Not
yeah.
that quickly. No
That's
way.
That's what's weird.
Really, remember Sammy Sosa when he played for the White Sox? He was this scrawny little
right.
kid, and
right.
then, boy, that changed.
Barry Bonds, too, when he played for Pittsburgh in the early days.
Yeah.
Just a
like
real
their
skinny.
Neck was so giant. That's
I
what I mean. It seems weird that this would happen without some enhancement.
There have been a few guys at the health clubs that I've belonged to that you look at them and you say, you could work out all day every day. You can't achieve that without some other
assistance.
Means. Yeah. But what would be in it for Dave Chappelle? I mean, I love him.
Midlife
I think he's
crisis.
Really funny. Is that what it is?
He's been out of the spotlight, too, for at least a few years now. So, I mean, it's not necessarily true that he's, like, taking something. He could be, you know what I mean?
But you know
his
what?
Whole body type has changed.
Right.
Isn't that a little suspect?
He just looks thick. Everything about him looks thick.
But
now.
I will say when skinny guys, you know, start working out seriously, they are, you know, are tending or they tend to blow up quicker, I think.
But they still
not
look like
this.
A skinny guy with big arms, you know? This is like he's thick everywhere.
Right. He's drinking.
Can you have
his
surgery
head is
for
big.
That? Like implant?
You can't have like bicep and tricep surgery to enhance
if
it.
If you could, I would do it in a minute.
Yeah.
The easiest way to get biceps, go have them implanted.
Go have them put in your arms. But it's not just his arms. It's his whole.
That's what I mean.
Everything about him. He's like, he looks like Stretch Armstrong.
He does. Or the Incredible Hulk.
Or the Rock's friend. Not even brother, just friend.
Which one? Just any?
Yeah, just a guy he'd hang out with.
All right, quick break. 312-981-7200. I just find it shocking you can transition your body so dramatically.
Right. I would love to look like that
no,
for a
you
day.
Wouldn't.
For a day to just walk around and Hulk get mad and just pick stuff up and throw it and just see what happens. I can't imagine being that, especially when you're that. How old is Dave Chappelle? In his early 40s? Ooh. So for 40-plus years, he's just a kind of a skinny, scrawny guy. And then out of nowhere, he looks like an apartment complex.
Well, any bodybuilders out there, please call 312-981-7200 because...
Have someone help you dial the phone.
See, that's
they're
not
very
how
they're very muscular.
Call.
No, because they're muscle-bound and it's hard to dial.
You're going to get punched by someone. Who's a bodybuilder?
I don't want that.
But just the question is, if you do beef up and get that big, you have to consistently work out because if you don't, isn't that going to just
yeah.
atrophy quicker and then
I would
you're
think
just
so.
A big
then you're just
fat
a tub.
Guy?
Yeah. No one wants that. All right. Give us a call or a text. We're trying to figure out what happened to Dave Chappelle. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Those go anywhere, my pillows really could fit on each ear of your headphones.
That would be a good thing for me.
Everybody heard it, too, because the mic was on.
I'm seeing birds like in cartoons flying around now. I thought that was just in cartoons. It's real.
We were I would say we were questioning how Dave Chappelle made such an amazing transformation.
You can't believe, Kim, have you seen the picture, Kim, that we're talking about? You see Dave Chappelle sitting at the basketball game the other night, and his arm, it doesn't make sense how big his arms are. And it's all muscle.
I'm looking right now.
Oh,
and we're
man.
Sure he wasn't misidentified.
No, that's Dave Chappelle. That's definitely him.
He looks great. I just,
yeah, he does.
It's a, you know, I guess we haven't seen it, but he has resurfaced in the last 2 years. Not
he did. He went back to doing clubs, and I'm going to say this honestly, with mixed reviews. It has not been an easy comeback for him.
Oh, my gosh. That's really...
See what I mean?
Oh, yeah. He is jacked.
That doesn't make sense.
No.
Becky, someone else was like that.
Joe Piscopo from Saturday Night Live. He used to be, you know, rather a medium-sized person, I think, from what you could tell. He did a great Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
But then after he left Saturday Night Live, pictures started to appear, and he was...
Like Lou Ferrigno. Oh. It looked like Lou Ferrigno. Seriously.
Yeah, his neck and his shoulders and his arms and stuff, and I was just like, that can't be him. And I kept looking. There was, yep, several pictures that I don't know about right now, but after Saturday Night Live, he got bulked up.
The story was that he had a little bit of a run-in with somebody at a club one night, and he vowed after that 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 was never going to happen again. He wasn't going to be pushed around by somebody.
Oh, God.
So he built himself up. And I hate to invoke the name Carrot Top, but Carrot Top is a similar story.
Yeah.
Very skinny guy.
But you still see, like, he's V-shaped. Like, his arms got big and his shoulders, but he's still, like, a slight guy.
Yeah.
It's Dave Chappelle's, like, a completely new person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Becky.
Somebody tweeted, Dave Chappelle looks like he ate a younger Dave Chappelle.
Becky, thank you.
Thank you, Becky.
I know that's funny, but it does. It looks like he could unzip himself and the real Dave Chappelle could come out of him.
That would be a trick.
Like the Michelin Man.
Right. Right.
All right. And I, you know, I'm not saying that he had some enhancements that he took, but it just seems like he's completely changed. But Dave, you know some ways to bulk up naturally?
Well, if you go to, like, any of those supplement stores, stuff like that, buy some of the Weider products. Well, Weiders are kind of expensive. They have a lot of...
Joe Weider, of course.
There's a lot of products that'll help you. Yeah, there's a lot of products that'll help you bulk up. I work out a lot. I don't build. I don't, I'm not into bulking up, but I work out a lot. I use some supplements, and you don't necessarily have to, roid out to get bulky.
Is it heavier weights as opposed to if you want to chisel yourself a little more, you would use lighter weights and more reps? What's the...
Well, I don't know. I bench press I bench press a lot. I'm not going to...
Go ahead and brag.
All right, I bench press in my reps about 375.
That's a lot.
Oh,
that's
my God,
considerable.
You could lift me up.
Come on down and lift Wendy up. That would be a fun picture.
Well, I could probably almost lift Steve Dahl, but...
Oh, all right.
I don't know about that.
Good luck with that.
All right, so 375 pounds, that's a lot.
Well, but that's after, 20 years of working out. You know, I started working out I started working out real seriously about, about 20 years ago after I got out of the Army. I was injured in the Army and decided, after my PT, I would just keep going. And, I'm sporting some nice guns and everything, but
do you
kiss
them?
Do
you kiss them at night when you go to bed? Good night. Good night.
No, I'm not Hulk Hogan or Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oh yeah,
I've been known to wear those bandanas. I've been in the martial arts all my life.
I saw Marshall Crenshaw. I don't know if that's the same.
Well, so, and now you're hooked on it, and that's good. So you can build up without really taking any kind of steroid type thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's what steroids do mostly, they help you heal the injuries, heal the ripped muscles quicker. Steroids don't necessarily build a body. They help your body heal, and then, heal quicker, and then you can, you still do the supplements and everything, but it's like I've got my best friend. His son just won the bodybuilding competition out in New York, Pennsylvania. It's definitely a supplement-free competition. Not supplement, but, steroid-free competition.
Right.
And that dude is ripped. I mean, he is the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lou Ferrigno looking guy, but he's done it all. It's all natural.
Dave, we have to run. We Steve's in for the Wintrust Business Lunch, but thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it. Have a great day.
Put your guns away.
Put those guns away. Need a Foyt cart to be him.
Thank you, Dave.
All right. So it's Wonder Bread, Wendy. That's all it can be. It's building his body good. That's it. That's the answer.
Ways.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to Steve next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks so much, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's part two of our show. Bill and Wendy, want to jump in? Why not? 312-981-7200. You can call us at that number or text us at that number.
Have the Hamilton tickets sold out yet, Kim? Everybody was expecting that to happen.
Well, I don't know if they've sold out, but I've been trying to get on while I've been working here at this computer, and it says searching, sit tight, and this has happened to me twice now where they said there were no tickets available on the dates that I wanted, and I keep picking other dates. And so right now I'm saying I'm not getting them.
Oh,
somebody
no.
else texted before we went to lunch break, and they said the same thing, that it said, please wait while you're being redirected. And it just, he waited 20 minutes and nothing came back, and he assumes he didn't get the
tickets.
Yeah,
and at 10 o'clock today, my husband thought he had them, and we had them for a November date. Then it said it could take 45 minutes to verify your credit card, and 11 minutes left to go, he got booted out.
Why is it with technology being at the state it's at? Can't you know within seconds if your transaction has gone
right.
through?
Right. I don't
or
know.
Not.
It said it was going to take 45 minutes to verify, which I found really kind of strange. But,
you know,
so.
I pre-ordered a computer that I'm picking up today at a specific store. And it was a little pricier than I've charged on my debit card for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't go through. It didn't go through on the website, and it says, please update your information. So I updated my information, and this was last night. This morning, I get a call from my bank and a text saying, did you verify this purchase? This is from the fraud department.
Yeah.
And it made me happy that my bank's got my back,
right.
but now I can't update the information.
But the technology...
It's my card.
I know. That's...
And I approved it, and it says, try again in 5 minutes, and it won't allow me to upgrade that information.
The technology is without a doubt there. It's in place.
Totally.
If you buy stuff on eBay or you pay for anything through PayPal, you know that within a second of you clicking, you have verification. So why would theater tickets still be 10 years in the past? Why wouldn't that be instantaneous?
And at least mine was declined because they wanted to notify me first. My bank
make sure it's really you.
Which is great.
Yeah.
But with tickets and you're on the website, it should say... confirmed or
right.
something. You shouldn't be in limbo for
no.
a while.
No.
That's bizarre.
I don't understand it. So, Kim, you only have... Oh, Kim went
Kim
to get
like
in line.
Kim looks like Steve Bertrand.
Kim went to run into line to get the Hamilton tickets.
But doesn't that make sense to you now why all these people were waiting? Because they didn't want to get lost in the inner hell.
Yeah, especially if... What did she say? It took 45 minutes just to verify whether or not the
tickets went through and it
yeah.
didn't.
That's awful.
And she's tried three times.
Oh, that's terrible. That shouldn't be that way.
You can just watch it on TV. Someone
on PBS?
Yeah, in October. They're going to get the last... I know it's not the same.
It's not the same as being there.
You can dress up.
Oh, I would. I definitely would. I've got all that colonial clothing in my closet. I never get to use it.
There is something pretty phenomenal about live theater because anything can happen, and that's what I like about it, the danger.
Yeah.
It's not really dangerous, but, you know.
My wife and daughters are going to New York. Kylie's going to school in New York as of August. So when her year starts up, I can't go, but Terry's going and Reese is going, and they're trying to decide which play to see while they're there. They're going to see at least one. And that's fun when you're on. I've had that experience where you're on
Broadway.
You can see anywhere from, you know, any one of 15, 20 shows. Oh, there's actually a lot more if you go off Broadway. But, you know, you look through and it's like when you're at a movie theater going, oh, that looks pretty good. That one looks pretty good. That one looks pretty good. We went with Lion King a couple years ago. It was fantastic. It's really good.
I've never really been to New York.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I was there to cover The Sopranos second season with Buzz Kilman.
Yeah.
And we got in at night, went to the cast party. Went to Carnegie Deli and then got on a plane to go home.
So you were in and out within a few hours.
Yeah, I mean,
that's not enough.
I want to go sometime.
I took each of my kids separately on trips.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to remember with Emma what we saw, but with Noah, we saw the Green Day play.
Oh yeah,
I wanted
to see really
that.
Good.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know I'm too old to be a Green Day fan, but I love them.
It seems like when you're walking around New York, like in Chicago, and this is a don't get me wrong, this is a world class city. And fantastic in every way. But in New York, it just seems like wherever you are, you can just walk in any direction and there's stuff everywhere. 24 hours a day.
Really? Like, we were open late and stuff?
Yeah, I was doing, MTV used to have a show called the MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour. So I was there shooting that. And I was there for 3 days. And on each of the nights, we would just, like, we would do clubs. And then when we were done at 1 or 2 in the morning, we would walk around and there were people out like it was 8 o'clock at night here. Like at 2 or 3 in the morning. It was like there was no difference between 8 o'clock at night or 3 in the morning.
And conversely, when I went to see a couple of my friends in LA, everything closes at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I don't
know. All the celebrities live there.
I don't know.
What, do they go to bed at 8 o'clock?
They just showed when the Cubs were in D.C. playing the Washington Nationals last week, they were showing how people not only got to the game late, like in the first 2 innings, there was nobody there. It wasn't until the 3rd inning that people would start filing in. And then in the 7th inning, and one of the games was tied in the 9th inning, they get there late and they leave early.
The government workers.
Is that what it is? Yeah. That has to be what it is.
When did they start calling the Nationals the Nats? Is that fairly recently? Because I don't like it.
Since their inception, that was always their nickname.
I only heard it this year for the first time.
Yeah, it's been around for a little while.
I don't like it.
Yeah. So, long story short, if you're trying to get Hamilton tickets, don't give up yet.
I say give up.
Is it time to give up?
Kim had no luck. She's been trying.
Now, what they were saying in the last couple of days is they would expect, and this makes perfect sense, they would expect opening night to sell out and maybe even that whole first week to sell out, but they didn't expect the entire run of the show to sell out. So I'm hopeful that if people have been spending their day online trying to get tickets, that it's for no reason, that it isn't for any reason. You'll get some tickets, I'm hoping.
Hamilton ticket rush creates long waits, secondary market prices reaching $9,000.
No,
if somebody
9,000?
Pays that,
not per ticket, even for a set of. I can't imagine.
They're already
eight
grand on StubHub.
Oh, wow.
This is ridiculous. And as to Kim's point, there is something on the WGN TV website that the tickets for Hamilton went on sale here in Chicago at 10 a.m. Complaints of issues with Ticketmaster website started at 10:01.
But that first minute went very smoothly.
Many Hamilton fans attempting to purchase the tickets online report issues with the website crashing or suddenly dropping tickets after they selected them, which is exactly what Kim said.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't even get that far and they're left staring at the sit tight message as the website tries to load. A bunch of people texted that. That's a problem.
That's a huge problem.
If you're still trying to get tickets, some people say they've had better luck with the Ticketmaster call-in line. That's what I would do. I would have to talk to a human.
Or I'd go to the Sears and wait for the Ticketmaster office to open.
Sure. By the automotive department?
Exactly.
Mine was at Carson's. Sorry, guys. By customer service.
Rich people.
1-800-745-3000. 1-800-745-3000.
You just gave my phone number.
When did you start working at Ticketmaster? I wonder, are people still in line? If you're still in line and you're listening to us on the WGN app, call us, 312-981-7200.
Andre Darlis this morning reported the line going wrapping around the block.
Yeah, but my question is, are people still waiting?
Now? Oh, I hope not. That was 3 or 4 hours ago.
Dude, people were, I know I called you dude very rarely.
No, this time deserved.
There were people from yesterday.
I know, they had a line yesterday.
Again.
I know, but that's better than paying... If you have your heart set on the show, paying $9,000 per ticket.
And do you need to see it on opening night? I mean, if I want to see a movie, I'm going to go see a movie and make time to do it. I don't have to be there on opening night.
You know, I was thinking about that, and you know how in sports, that's a big thing to be there for opening day. But then if you look at the crowd on the second day of the season, it's pretty much empty. Why wouldn't you just go save a couple of $1,000 per ticket and see it on the second or third day? Probably going to be a similar show.
Well, Star Wars, no one could wait in my family because of spoilers.
Right.
And because Jimmy Mack just, he lives
He's been waiting for years.
He's right. Already camped out ready for the December showing of the new movie. And my son Dylan's kind of like that with the new action hero movies.
Yeah.
He likes to go opening weekend because he buys into the excitement of
for
it,
For the superhero
I think.
Ones? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and in all fairness to Ticketmaster, Jennifer, you went online and got tickets to Hamilton, no prob?
No problem. I waited for like an hour and a half, but they popped up, and now I got tickets for February, but I got them nonetheless.
How many tickets did you get?
I got 4.
Who are you bringing? Can Bill and I come
with
you?
Yeah, we want to come with you.
It all depends.
Ah.
We can make a deal.
Are you comfortable saying what you paid? Because we just found out people are paying an upwards of $9,000 per ticket. You didn't pay anywhere near $9,000, did you?
No, I paid $117.
That's not bad.
I think they started at what, like $85 and went up to $135 or something like that?
I saw $457 right in front.
Wow.
But I just, you know, I just went straight on and thought, well, if I get it, I get it. So, if you know, it took a while. It took patience, but it worked.
And can I just ask you, is this something you've always wanted to see, or as the hype got bigger, your interest got more into it?
I kind of like to see any theater. So, you know, I would do it. I'm not one of those that's going to spend $8,000, but I'll go spend $100 or $150 for a nice night at the theater.
Totally worth it.
Anything. Yeah, totally.
Well, congrats.
I mean, if you think about what you spend on a movie,
sure.
You know, sure, it's worth it.
Well, thank you so much, and have a great time. If you need a couple of people, Bill and I could be a seat filler with you.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'll call you for my date.
All right.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you. For $9,000, I'd want to sit on the stage in a lawn chair and watch it right up close.
Maybe we can arrange that.
All right, maybe. We'll take a quick break and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Tickets for the musical Hamilton is all the rage, and they went on sale this morning at 10 a.m. People waited in lines that circled the downtown area.
Yep.
People were having trouble online. Karen seems to have found the solution on how to get tickets. Hi, Karen.
Well, hi. I got down there like at 8:30. I didn't even know there was going to be a line. And then I heard on Steve's show, oh, yeah, there's a line. And that Andrea was heading over there. Anyway, I parked and I couldn't even find the end of the line because it was going around and around the building. And we ended up being in an alley. and everybody who was in line at 10 o'clock, everybody went on their phone. So everybody was trying, even though they were in line, to get on their phones. And by about 11:30, I think, finally, after about 10 or 12 times, I got through online and got tickets.
Nice.
I was going to have to leave at 12:30 because I had an appointment at 2 o'clock in Evergreen Park. And I'm like, I'm going to stay in this line this whole time and get nothing. So in reality, I probably could have stayed at home.
You could have.
And gotten those same tickets on my phone. But you know what? It was fun because everybody was there for the same reason. It wasn't real hot. You know, there was a man there from Champaign that we talked to and a lady from Crystal Lake. And, you know, it was kind of like going to a sports event. Everybody was there for the same reason. And it was just fun talking to everybody. And I got a big cheer when I got the tickets because I think everybody was trying. And it seemed like I was the first one to get four tickets for the – not I didn't get the date I originally wanted, but a couple days to one side of that. So I'm sure there are still people waiting in that line because I am sure I had, when I left at 11:30, I bet you there was going to be another 2 hours before we got up to the window.
Seriously.
It was unbelievable. Yeah, crazy.
Somebody just said right now, they texted us, been online since 10 a.m. with searching sit tight message on my eighth date search. $500 is what the orchestra seats are going for.
Wow.
Ridiculous.
Oh, no. I got orchestra seats and they were $215 a piece, and I got them on Ticketmaster. Now I had to pay the fees,
yeah,
which you wouldn't have had to pay if I had gotten up to the box office. But I didn't think I was going to get there because I had to be out of the city by 12:30. And I said there was no way. So I was lucky I got them.
That's the key. You got the tickets, Karen.
Yeah, it was great.
Congratulations! Awesome. Enjoy the show.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys. Bye bye.
I'm glad she got them.
I wish everybody who wants them would get them.
Yeah, me too.
And then, again, they can take us. Hi, Lori.
Mm. Hi, how are you?
We're good. You got your tickets to Hamilton? How exciting.
I actually saw Hamilton in New York City 10 days ago.
Is it the best show you've ever seen on Broadway?
It is the best show, and I've seen a lot of shows.
Yeah.
We weren't going to go. We were going to the city to see a couple other shows, and I thought, I'm not paying that kind of money for a ticket. And then a week before we left, they announced that Lin-Manuel was not going to be doing the role anymore.
Right.
So I called my husband and I said, you know how I have this obsession with Hamilton? He's like, yeah. And you know how I have this obsession with Lin-Manuel? And he said, yeah.
And then he said, get to the point, honey.
And I know. And then he said, you're going to make a really irresponsible financial decision right now, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am. And then that's what I did. And I bought a ticket for my friend, and I surprised her, and it was awesome. It's worth all the hype. But I'm glad that I'm not stressing out today trying to get tickets, because I don't need to see it again. I've seen it, and it was awesome.
Well, that's good to know. I'm glad it paid off for you. And it's also interesting to know that you don't have to see it again.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I will if someone has a ticket.
Right, but it's not necessary.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, cool.
Yeah, so it was awesome.
Do you want to share with us how much you paid for the two tickets? You don't have to.
No, $2,200.
Holy.
That's a lot of money. But you know what? It's one of those experiences, you know, you'll remember forever. So why not, right?
Yeah, and yeah,
like eating for
sharing
a year.
Well, I have a little second job, so I told my husband I'm just going to take it out of my slush fund, and so, you know, I know what I was saving it for all this time. There was something I was saving it for.
Can I just tell
it.
You,
it was well worth it.
Lori, you are the best friend in the whole wide world because you said you bought this and surprised your friend with the ticket.
Oh, I have it on video. It's hilarious.
It should be hilarious for $1,100.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be more than that. But it was fun. Everyone there was sharing their stories about why they were there and how they got their tickets, and it was really fun. So I'm glad I did it. I told my husband I would have regretted it if I didn't do it. So.
Right. Makes
yeah,
sense. Well, thanks
awesome.
So much for the call. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lori.
Have a good day.
Bye, Lori. You too.
That is a good friend.
Yeah, I guess.
Would you ever spend $1,100 for something for
boy,
me?
Boy, that would be, yeah.
I'm trying to think of what the possibilities might be there.
Me too. We all are. We all are.
Thanks, Phil.
Yep. All right.
If well, I had it, I'd spend it on
yeah,
you.
If I, well, if you had it,
yeah,
sure.
Had
if you had
that,
it.
Whatever.
Sorry, kids, you can't go to college. How come? I took Wendy to see a play. Oh, that's fine.
It was
that's
a good
fine.
Play.
It was a very good play.
She doesn't have to see it again.
Right. She only wanted to see it the one time. We'll take a break. Steve has the news. And then more ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I don't have a touch of gray. My whole head is white, I would say. Not gray on top, white on the sides. It's kind of like
that right?
Old people mullet.
Yeah. That's the way to sell it.
Party in the front, or business in front, party in the back.
Business in the front, nap in the back, if you're talking about an old people mullet. Party in the front, Metamucil in the back. You know, this is interesting to me. There's been a debate over the years as to whether or not stress would give you gray hair.
Everybody says it.
I was sure of it. I was sure.
I tell my kids that's why I have to get my hair colored so often.
Because of the stress,
because
right?
Because of them.
Well, it turns out that's not true. I'm shocked by this. I was positive
really?
There was a correlation. Positive.
I didn't think so.
Yeah. It says, when you spot that first silvery strand of hair, this is according to MSN.com, when you spot that first silvery strand of hair, and by the way, do you remember the first time you found hair on your head that was either silver or gray or white? Because it was not a pleasant day for me.
I don't, because being blonde and having various colors in my hair, I didn't really notice it till
it was just part of the
yeah,
landscape.
It kind of all blended in.
Yeah.
My brother went gray very early. He
did
was
he?
Before 21. Kevin has some gray hairs.
Yeah.
Remember that?
About a year ago. About a year ago, yeah. I think I noticed my first one.
Oh, I didn't
one.
Know that.
We
oh,
did
yeah.
it on the air, didn't I?
Yep.
Yep.
Where
did,
where was it?
On the side, kind of.
By your temple?
By your temple?
Yeah.
Kevin's Jewish?
Did you really just do that to set yourself up?
No.
You're good.
I totally did.
I was curious totally. As to where he found it.
When you recycle material you used in your stand-up from years ago.
No, I don't, because I worked very blue, Wendy.
You
I couldn't
did
do it on
not
the radio.
At all.
And
very
it was funnier
dirty.
Than that.
Way funnier. Yeah. Way funnier. People paid a cover charge. I couldn't
Steve,
do the same
when
stuff.
Did you go gray?
And
was
Steve's
it early?
Not gray. He
has
may
gray
have
hair.
Well,
my
a
husband's
couple, but,
really gray.
But when I hear somebody's gone gray, that says to me they're not. They're just all gray.
Yeah, I don't remember, frankly. Maybe 10 years ago or something.
Yeah.
When I started getting gray more than that. I really don't. I don't give a care.
Can I tell you something? Because Jim's hair went pretty gray. We see like pictures of even like maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And he's like, God, look at how gray I am now. I think it looks really distinguished and awesome on guys.
People always say distinguished. What does that mean exactly? When you say somebody's hair makes them look distinguished.
I'll tell you exactly what
that
means.
What does that mean?
When I married Jimmy Mack, he had a baby face. He looked young. So now he looks like an adult. Worldly? Yeah, like yeah. just an experienced individual.
Okay. Because I always hear that term thrown around, and I know technically what it means, but I always wonder if people really mean it when they say, you look distinguished, because I hear you look older when I hear that phrase.
I like it.
You're okay with it? When you first spot that silvery strand in your hair, it's hard not to have a brief moment of panic. I did. Followed by quickly combing through your locks to see if there are any others. I told you what I did, and did for a while, for a couple of months. I would take tweezers, and if there was a gray hair or silver hair, or God forbid a white hair, I quickly extinguished it.
Well, they also tell you that if you pull out a gray hair, three will grow back in its place.
Is that true? That's not true, is it?
You look so worried right now.
That's not true.
It can't be true. Now, distinguished means, let me just go to dictionary.com, successful, authoritative, or commanding great respect. Yes, that's what it means when I see a gray-haired guy.
All right. Because I hear
you don't have that much gray, so you don't look distinguished.
I don't have any
yet.
Of that. And the attributes you just mentioned, I'm not on board with any of those. If it hasn't happened to you yet, it eventually will. So what exactly makes your hair turn gray, and does stress play a role? Now, I swear to you, if I was still a betting person, I would say, well, yeah, stress absolutely would turn your hair gray
it's
or
hereditary.
White.
It's hereditary.
It is. It is. First, some background on hair color. Hair gets its hue from melanin. That's the same pigment that determines your skin color and your eye color. But with hair, you start to lose melanin as you get older. Well, why can't they do, isn't there some, they could do something about that, couldn't they?
A melanin input sort of thing, transplant?
Yeah.
No, because.
A booster, a melanin booster.
Remember a song, Brand New Key? I love that song.
Yeah.
That's one of my go-to songs, Melanie's Brand New Key.
Yeah.
I do little side projects where I sing, and that's one of them. Oh. I'll sing it for you sometime, Steve.
Again?
Maybe for your birthday.
But you, when you get older, you notice that. It's like, I just remembered my mom had cancer. She went through chemo. Prior to that, all she did was bleach her hair, perm her hair, because that's what they did.
Yeah.
You always did it. And then when it came back.
And frost it? Did she ever frost her hair?
Yeah. Yeah, you would frost and tip.
Yep.
And after it came back after chemo and it grew back, it was the prettiest color of like salt and pepper gray.
Oh.
It was part white, part gray. It was beautiful.
Did you like it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like thinking all these years you did all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then, boy, just let it go. Oh, natural. Emmylou Harris. Need I say anything more?
You might have to. Tell me why Emmylou Harris.
She has beautiful... Is it Emmylou Harris or who am I thinking of that has this gorgeous gray hair?
Yeah, I think that's Emmylou Harris now.
Yeah.
She doesn't look distinguished. I'd say she just looks beautiful.
I'm with you too on this, Wendy. I say embrace the gray. Let it go.
Really? Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
All right. A typical hair on your head can grow for up to 3 years... says Angela Lamb, a dermatologist at Mount Sinai Hospital.
Darn it, I thought you were going to say Angela Lansbury.
Says Angela Lansbury from
Emmylou
Murder,
Harris.
She Wrote. Oh, yeah. She looks fantastic. I don't remember the last time I saw her, but she's never looked better.
It's just
her hair
completely
looks great.
And you know what the weird trend is nowadays, too, that people are doing? You know, I like to do balayage, which is dark at the roots and blonder at the tips, kind of ombre-like. A lot of people are going gray. They're getting their hair colored gray.
Yeah.
Like maybe at the bottom.
You know, the 13th sexiest scientist in the world does that.
Some gray hair can be very pretty. You know, I like to have various colors in my hair.
Sure. It's like seeing the Buckingham Fountain sometimes when we see you.
Thank you. That's what I'm going for. And in the 80s, it was really that big. I don't know how I got it to stay up that high.
Back to Angela Lamb, dermatologist at Mount Sinai Hospital. She says, when the hair on your head is red, the germ cells that produce the pigment need to get going again. And as we age, the ability to do that robustly decreases.
Wait, germ cells?
Yeah, germ cells.
And not only red hair?
Yeah, I don't know why she singled out red hair. I have no idea why she went that route, but
she
did.
So do they go gray quicker or slower because their germ cells need to reactivate?
It doesn't say. But, back to the original question, can stress speed up this process? Again, I would imagine yes, because don't you hear, like, parents always do this to their kids, and you even pointed this out earlier.
Because our parents told us.
Keep making me worry. Look at my hair. You see what my hair's doing? That's because of you. Every parent does that.
Again, this is coming from when I lied, my mom would tell me my blue eyes would turn green. And if I looked in the mirror too much, I'd get worms in my stomach.
Wow. Wow. She went for the jugular. While stress has been known to trigger some hair loss, there's little research showing that it can actually turn your hair gray. It certainly can't turn white overnight. But haven't you heard stories over the years about somebody who's in a situation that's highly stressful and within like minutes or hours, their hair turns gray or white? I've heard those stories.
Like Einstein's hair turned white overnight, didn't it?
Oh, I hadn't heard it about Einstein.
I hadn't heard it about anybody. I heard one time, all right, I'll admit this. If somebody scared you bad enough,
right,
your hair would turn
That's
white.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant.
God, the things we believed.
Hey, Einstein, all your bagel places are going out of business. And then his hair would just turn
Boom,
white.
Like that. Like cream cheese.
Right. Not my bagel places. And then his hair just turns completely white.
That equals did not sound M-square anything. I'm sorry, what, Steve?
I was just doing my Einstein.
Yeah, I didn't hear it. I talked over it. I'm sorry.
That's good for everyone.
The leaching of color is a gradual process. Did you know that, Wendy, about the leaching of color?
Well, you notice one or two strands, and then the next thing you know, it's like, oh, my God, my
right.
sideburns are white.
Right. It almost always starts there, right?
Or mine, now I'm at the top of my head, too. And
yeah.
the part,
yeah,
that's gray. It's white at my temple.
Oh.
It's kind of salt
Shalom.
And pepper.
Shalom. That said, it's possible that stress does have some.
It still works. I'm sorry.
It's possible.
It's funnier now that he says, okay, I'm about to do it.
Right. And then
It'll happen
through.
Again before the end of the day. Can we take a quick break and you
sure.
can compose yourself?
Sure.
All right. It's Bill F. It's giggly here on 720 WGN.
There was this kid who got into an accident and couldn't come to school. But when he finally came back, his hair had turned from black into bright white.
Wow.
It happens that quick.
That's how fast.
Does stress lead to gray hair? We're finding out that doesn't really mean it. It's more hereditary. And I always heard for boys, it's the maternal grandparent.
Is that whose lineage would determine whether or not your hair turns gray or not?
Yeah, but that doesn't seem fair.
It doesn't seem fair.
What about the paternal grandparents?
Yeah.
Bob, you know someone whose hair turned from black to white?
Yes, I do, actually. A woman who's she had a baby, and the baby died of that sudden crib death, and she went in to check, and from that day on, her hair came out white. I mean, it didn't turn the hair, it was already on her head white, but it went from black to white as it grew in.
Now, did you know this person?
Yes, I did.
Because it's very tragic that sudden infant death is terrible. I do know that having a baby changes your hair, because my hair got like a natural wave to it after I had kids. It's been poker straight my whole life.
Yeah, I met her, and she was an aunt of a close friend of mine, and I met her at a family gathering, and the guy that my friend said, "You notice her hair?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "She's kind of young for that, you know, hair like that." And he said, they explained to me what happened, and he said, since that day, the shock was so great that her hair came in white. I mean, and it was like that platinum white,
right.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't gray.
But that's how I've always heard that it happens, when something so highly traumatic happens to you that it somehow shocks you, and that's how your hair would react.
I don't know, guys.
You don't
I
think
mean,
so? But, you know?
But it didn't turn her hair that was already grown
right,
out.
Right, it would start growing in white. But maybe she colored her hair before, and then after the death of her baby said, I give up.
But
and
you're not supposed to color your hair while pregnant. No. Though.
You're not supposed to. Some people do.
I mean, my friend told me that it had... The shock was so great that ever since then, she just left it.
Yeah,
white.
Sure. Wow.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Bob. That
Thanks,
is strange.
Bob.
It's like Ripley's Believe It or Not.
But he did know her. Like, usually a story like that, it's, well, I don't actually know her, but I know somebody who knows her.
Yeah, but how do you know she wasn't coloring her hair?
Oh, I guess. Well, maybe.
I mean, you know, you weren't supposed to smoke and drink when you were having babies, but when we were born, you saw people smoking all the time when they were pregnant.
Yeah. There'd be ads for Salem's on baby diapers when we were kids, remember?
No.
You don't remember that?
I just don't know that I believe that.
Oh.
I'm not sure. I'm not doubting you, Bob. It just seems weird. Hi, Jack.
It was funny. Baby diapers.
I don't believe that either, to be honest with you.
See an ad for Salem's on baby's diapers. Yeah. Okay. What's going on, Jack?
My daughter's girlfriend, they're both 26, and she's a natural blonde. I haven't seen her in a year up until like about a month ago. And she went and dyed her hair gray with a very, very light tinge hue of blue.
Yep.
And I had to do a double take, and I'm like, that really looks good. I mean, you see some of these kids that are dyeing their hair bright blue, purple, red, orange, and they just look like they're getting ready for Halloween. And I'm like, that really look good. And Bill, if you're worried about your hair going gray, I mean, really, who cares? When you walk down the street and you see another guy, do you go and say, hey, you look good with that salt and pepper hair, or hey, you know, your hair is going gray, I'm going to get there one day, and...
He just points and laughs. That's all he does, Jack.
I'm okay with it on other people. I'm just not ready. And I get like a weird silvery color. And I don't know. It doesn't work I don't like it. I'd prefer that it not happen that way.
Just look in the mirror and say, look, I'm Clooney-esque. And all the women love that.
That's true.
Honestly,
Rosemary Clooney, though, for me.
No.
Not George Clooney.
Jack, you're a great audience for him. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jack.
All right, take care.
Bye.
That's a big, huge thing that these young kids are doing, and really, just wait. It's going to go gray naturally on your own.
I
don't pay for it.
I know.
Tom has an interesting fact. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hi. I was just going to comment about the presidents, seeing each president come in and how they look when they finish their 4 or 8 year term, how much gray they have.
They age pretty rapidly, but you have to understand, like, for somebody, let's take Barack Obama, for instance, these 8 years that he's been in office, nearly 8 years, those are the prime years for graying. I mean, I'm sure
Clinton too.
Bill Clinton's a perfect example. I'm sure it's sped up a little bit by the fact that they're under so much pressure and stress.
It says it doesn't have any correlation.
You don't think so in a case like that where you're the president? I would imagine.
You just read that it has nothing to do with stress.
True, but they seem to get so gray so suddenly and makes you wonder, if it can be stress related, even though, it doesn't say so, but, thought that'd be an interesting fact for you guys.
Sure.
Definitely Obama, you notice it on.
A lot.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Very much so.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate you contributing.
Right. Not a problem. Thank you.
All right, Bill, we have time for one more. You have to pick it because I don't believe anybody anymore.
Oh. Do Bonnie.
Hello, Bonnie.
Yeah.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, do Bonnie.
Do Bonnie.
Hi, guys. I love your show.
Get a
Thanks,
room.
Bonnie.
I listen to it all the time. I called in several times, but I have a couple things. Your producer said he found the one about myself more interesting. When I found out that my young daughter, who was 13 years old, had been arrested for stealing and to pay her drug dealer.
Overnight,
I got a white streak in my hair.
Overnight that happened?
Overnight. But there's a very famous story and movie, Unbroken. You know the movie Angelina Jolie made?
Yeah.
Where the guy, he's at sea with one of his other fellas, and then they're captured by the Japanese, and they're in prison.
Right, I saw that movie a couple years ago.
His mother, I read the book, and I apologize for not remembering his name. His mother, who is Italian, went from black hair to white hair after finding out he was missing in action.
Wow.
She never believed he was dead, but she went from her black hair to white overnight.
Overnight that happened. So it is.
I just read that book about 2 months ago. It was fabulous. I don't know why that movie didn't win Oscars.
Yeah, it was really good. Really good.
It really was. Yeah, but yeah, I couldn't believe it either. And my dad used to blame us girls, or two teenage girls. He said, "You did this to me."
Every parent does that. That comes with the kit when you're a parent.
It does, and it works. Makes you feel guilty.
But anyway, that's my contribution.
Thank you, Bonnie.
I'm 65, and only the top hairs on my head. Everything else is still my brownish blonde hair, but I'm silver on top, and people think I actually have a touch. Died that way.
Sure.
And they think it's really pretty, but go gray.
Yep, all right.
Well,
Thank you, Bonnie.
We appreciate it. I don't know where your information is from, because it said right in your article that it doesn't.
On MSN, they say that stress does not give you gray hair, despite what most people think.
ScientificAmerican.com says that gray hairs may arrive sooner with stress.
Oh,
it
really?
Still has something. It can affect the melatonin in your, or is it melanin or melatonin? Because it says that it can happen.
It can.
With stress.
All right.
Hair melanin comes in, and there is evidence that stress hormones can signal these things to release some of the melanin or get rid of it.
How about that?
Hormones, you know, they're very important in a lot of functions.
Sure they are. Absolutely.
How do you make a hormone?
By not paying her. Also, Rogue in the X-Men, her hair went white after a very bad incident with Apocalypse, I think, in X-Men.
Isn't that a comic?
Yeah, but it's based on a true story. We'll take a quick break, and then Steve has the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Thrilled that you're here. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200.
I just got more gray since working with you.
I know. You should have somebody from Clairol just sitting next to you all through the show, just with
touching
like
me up.
Yeah, with like a spray can.
Spray.
All through the show. I'm Michael Winslow. Nice to meet you.
Good.
I saw this over at Huffington Post. There's a writer at Huffington Post, and her name is Shelley Emling. And she just gave some advice to her daughter, who is 16 years old, that now she is questioning as to whether or not this is good advice.
Now, I hope this makes me Mother of the Year again.
I think this is a step in the right direction for you.
Yes.
Here's what she writes. Now, I'm not going to read you the whole thing. I'll get to the advice because I'm curious as to whether or not you think this is good advice, if it's accurate or not. She says, Shelley Emling, the writer over at Huffington Post, says, "My daughter, who just turned 16, is a typical teenager. She's absorbed with her friends to the exclusion of almost everything else, creating an insular world that I only rarely get an insider glimpse of. She's a sophomore, her daughter is. She has friends all of different ages, but for whatever reason, many of her daughter's closest friends are seniors. Keep in mind, she's a sophomore, so her friends a little bit older, seniors. They are set to graduate in a few days before heading off to colleges across the country and even around the world in the fall. For weeks, my daughter," she says, "has talked to me about her many emotions surrounding these eventual departures." Now, I've gone through this already with my own daughters, and you're about to go through this with your sons. "Already, the idea of saying goodbye to so many of her friend group is creating a serious pang of angst and sadness."
With good reason.
With good reason. "Her desire to spend every waking moment with her friends this summer almost derailed her long-held goal of being a counselor at summer camp. She agreed to go, but only reluctantly." Now, here comes the advice. That's coming up. "All this leads me to a conversation that she and I had over lunch last week, in which she once again talked at length about how hard it will be for her and her friends to bid their farewells." And it is. Hands down, it's a very difficult thing. "She told me to prepare for a flood of tears, and I have no doubt that there will be many days filled with crying come August. But as she carried on, and while I rifled through my purse trying to find money to pay the bill," I assume because they're at lunch.
All right, but who's this talking? The mom?
The mom talking. Shelley is talking about her daughter. "I said something I almost instantly regretted." Here's what it is. She said, "Honey, I know this is hard for you to believe, but you probably won't even remember these people when you're my age."
Oh, my God. That is the worst thing to say. and probably not true.
There's a tinge of truth to it.
No, if
a little bit of truth,
I
but still a terrible thing to say.
Five girls that I still hang out with that I met in sixth grade.
Yeah.
And then I have another five to six that I met freshman year in high school that I still see on a regular basis.
Yeah.
That's 10 people that I've stayed in touch with. You know, the kid.
For 40 plus years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're good friends going away to college, you know, you're not gone for the rest of your life.
Right.
You come back for holidays,
right,
for summer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you kind of put things on hold because you all have your things. She's going to have her junior year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have their freshman year in college, and they're going to be busy. But come summertime, you know, a true friendship, you come back and take off where you, or you take over where you left off.
I can't figure out what dictates the longevity of a friendship. I have several friends from my first grade class. Two of my best friends I met in first grade. So the first day of first grade, I met them, and they're still friends with me to this day. But then there's other kids that I was so close to in grade school and high school or college that, you know, you just, for whatever reason, sometimes it's exactly what this woman is writing about. It's that separation after high school where somebody goes out of state and it just never picks up. But I can't figure out what exactly determines. I guess it's just the effort of staying in touch. Right.
And if you have a bond, my girlfriend Jan moved away. She's in Arizona. I don't see her as much as the other girls I've known since sixth grade. But whenever she's in town, we all get together and we have a great weekend. We do a girls' weekend together.
They've stopped by the studio, right? Yeah.
So it's like I don't see her because we're not in the same proximity anymore.
Right.
But, and I guess I don't call her on the phone as much as I should and talk to her. But
when you do get together,
it's like
it picks
not
up right
a day
where you
has
left
been
off.
Missed.
Yeah.
And then we reminisce about things. And then I have friends who live one town over that I don't really see that much either because we're so busy now,
right,
with our own kids and our lives and stuff.
Yeah.
So I just think it depends. You know, if these are really, truly good friends of hers, I don't know. That's kind of a terrible thing. Like I would have said, oh, honey, they'll be home for, you know, break. There's a couple breaks. There's spring break.
Yeah.
There's summer. Just see what happens.
I'm not sure what was in it for her, for the mom.
Although she said she regretted it the minute she said it.
That's what I'm getting at. I don't know why she would have said it initially, but the fact that she recognizes that at this point, this girl is 16 years old and losing a bunch of her best friends, so she's a little bit on the vulnerable side. I don't know exactly what was in it for her to go, let them go. You probably won't even know their names in a couple of years. That's not really the best way to handle a moment like that.
No. I mean, you could even just say, hey, in life, you know, different people take different paths.
Right.
Maybe those paths will come together once again, but for a while, they're going down a different road.
Yeah. All right, your thoughts on this. Was this a good thing for a mom to tell her 16-year-old daughter? I know your friends are leaving, but they're not really your friends. You won't even remember their names.
That's terrible.
I know. 312-981-7200. Your thoughts on this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Do you wish that you were handier around the house? Learn how to tackle those DIY projects with some help from local home experts. You can do it, you know, with Weekend Workbench, Sunday mornings at 11 on WGN-TV.
16-year-old girl goes out to lunch with her mom. Her friends are going away to school. What does mom tell her over lunch?
Here's what her mom says in these words. Honey, I know this is hard for you to believe, but you probably won't even remember these people when you're my age.
That's harsh.
At first, the mom says she looked surprised, but then she turned defiant, assuring me that she would most certainly remember them, all of them, forever.
Kevin?
I think I'm rare in this, but the majority of my friends I made in high school.
Don't you have
me too? And
most
junior
people
high.
Have yeah. friends from every stage of their life, right? You carry some over, you drop some, but some of my best friends to this day are grade school, and I'm saying first grade friends.
They don't really like you. They told me
that's not true. That's
but
not
that's
true
where
at all.
You meet your good friends,
right?
My husband was saying high school because, you know, my boys are still kind of figuring out who they want to hang with. And Jim's like, yeah, my really closest friends I met in high school.
Yeah.
I'd have to say junior high and high school. But now Joe thinks that mom was pretty accurate.
Oh, yeah?
What do you think, Joe?
Hey, Bill and Skywind.
Hey.
How are you, Joe? What's up?
That's proof I'm a listener. You know what, guys? I don't know. I'm kind of agree with the mom.
because she's 16 years old. She got a lot of living to do, and that's life experience talking, coming from her mom. I would like to say 99.99% of the chance she's going to forget about the people. She got a lot of living to do. She's going to be exposed to a lot. They're going to wind up living in different states. Who knows? Probably living in different countries. I kind of think they'll be forgot about.
But Joe, that upset the daughter. Wouldn't it have been nicer to say, honey, you know, you guys are going to take different paths. Perhaps your paths will meet once again. If not, you're going to make new friends. Wouldn't that have been nicer?
She'll appreciate that later in life. And I guarantee she'll probably tell her kid the same thing.
But Joe, you have some friends. You've retained some of your friends from your high school years, haven't you?
No, not really, because we grew apart. They're in different states.
Yeah.
I stayed in Illinois, but a lot of them graduated from college and just moved to different states. You know, and I'm not a Facebook guy, and they're on Facebook, and I can reach out to them, but I'm not a Facebook guy, and calling them, I wouldn't call them.
No?
No, not at all. I mean,
Joe needs a new friend. Why don't you be Joe's friend?
Joe, pal around with me and Grant Mulvey.
I got one.
You do? All right.
Yeah, my wife.
Oh, well, that's the perfect answer.
Sweet. She must
that's
be
very
listening.
Nice.
She is.
All right. Good.
Hey, Joe, thank you for calling. I appreciate it. So does Bill.
You bet. Perfect.
All right. And he made a point about Facebook. D, Facebook is very good for this stuff, isn't it?
It is. It is. I graduated from high school a very long time ago, and I moved away right after college, and I did not keep in touch with any of my friends from grade school or junior high or high school at all until Facebook came around. I live 4.5 to 5 hours away from where I went to school, so the only time I ever see them, any of those people, is either on social media or at a reunion.
Yeah.
And last year I went to a reunion, and it was really nice because I could kind of be able to talk intelligently about these people's lives with them because of what I had seen on Facebook. But if I would go to lunch, I go to lunch with people that I've either just met in the past 20 years or, and I'm old, but I'd have no relationship with any of the kids that I went to high school or grade school.
Does that hurt you a little bit? Does that upset you?
I'm sorry?
Does that upset you a little bit that all those people who meant so much to you at some point have just kind of faded out of your circle a little? That doesn't bother you at all?
I miss, there's three people that I really do miss.
Yeah.
And I've tried to track them down, but they must not be social bodies or else they've changed their name, you know, gotten married and changed their name. One gal that I was my next door neighbor for a long period of time, she lives in Texas now, and so we kind of talk a little bit on Facebook, but the important people in my life are with me every day.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess.
It's my kids, my grandkids, and the people that I've made my family, because I'm an only child, so the people that I've made my family now are the ones that are the most important to me. And I agree with Wendy that mother said it the wrong way, and she should have mentioned the fact, you know, you've got smartphones, you've got social media.
See, that changes things too immensely.
Right.
That's true, the way you can just text somebody even though they're away at school.
Right, right.
Well, and there's FaceTime and Google Chat or Google Hangouts and all that kind of stuff now that was nowhere near the horizon when I was coming out of school. So being able to stay in touch with people now is just so much easier than it was. We had a friend whose daughter went to Africa in the Peace Corps, and they were able to talk to her once a week on
Skype.
Facebook chat.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
Skype, whatever it was. And years ago, if you would have gone into the Peace Corps, you wouldn't have been able to get anything except for a 10-day-old letter from those people. So it's just so different now. That young girl need not worry about whether or not that relationship is going to stay intact, except for the fact that space and distance and time may deteriorate it, not the fact that they can't stay in touch.
So true.
Good point, Dee. We thank you very much for sharing that. And we've got to talk to Sue before we take a quick break here. Hey, Sue, when did you meet one of your friends?
I met one of my friends in
first grade, and it was 60 years ago, and we're still friends.
Isn't that beautiful?
That's fantastic.
Yeah. She lives in Seattle, and I live in Glen Ellen, and we still get together. She's coming in August.
Well, tell her we said hello and get her to listen to us, okay, Sue?
I will do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For a while, my mom kept in touch with the woman whose bed was next to her when I was being born. She had a son the day before or after. The day before I was born, she had her son. So my mom stayed in touch with her, and then my mom used to say, I hope you and John stay friends forever, but at some point you go, other than the fact that we were next to each other.
You didn't talk much.
There wasn't a whole, we didn't have much in common. I mean, every time we'd see each other, we go, yeah, remember that? Those first few days laying in the house, that was great. But then, you know, we were so different other than that.
How sweet is it of your mom, though, to have kept in touch
yeah,
with that woman?
For
they
years
shared
and
a
years.
Bunch of moments together.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like private rooms,
right,
and I don't have to keep touch with anyone.
It's easier. We'll take a break. Steve has the news. Thanks, everybody, for contributing on that. Steve with the news next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I hate to talk over the song.
My You're not supposed to.
Rock Jack days coming back to me. But the rock and roll tug of war continues in court today. Here's what's going on. Led Zeppelin was taken to court by the band Spirit's late guitarist Randy California, claiming that Stairway to Heaven was stolen from their tune Taurus. And live in the courtroom, or just out of the courtroom, is ABC News correspondent Jason Nathanson. Hi, Jason.
You can talk over the song. It's 8 minutes long.
Oh, I know.
It's going to fault you. That's fine. Yeah, I'm right outside the courtroom. I'm actually downstairs right now. Court's on a lunch break. It's going to start up at 1 o'clock. But today, we got Robert Plant on the stand for the first time, the singer for Led Zeppelin. And he and Jimmy Page have been in court the whole time this past week. I think it started last Tuesday, so it's been about a week. Page was on the stand earlier. He was called actually by the plaintiff for some kind of aggressive questioning last week. So this is the first time we've seen Plant. And Plant was basically, the whole point of the testimony there was to refute an account from one of the bassists from Spirit, who said in the late 60s that Robert Plant and this guy, Mark Andes, the bassist for Spirit, played snooker in a club in Birmingham, 40 years ago. So basically saying Robert Plant had the opportunity to meet these guys, he knew their music, and that's how, maybe the song was stolen, if it was stolen.
Now, I know that Led Zeppelin played with Spirit on a tour, but Jimmy Page is saying he never even heard the song Taurus until, like, one of his in-laws, his daughter-in-law or son-in-law says, oh my God, the internet is burning up with this Taurus Stairway to Heaven thing, and that's when he was made aware of it.
Exactly. So there's two things for this case to actually be proven. One of them is access. And that is that did Robert Plant and Jimmy Page have access to this song? So that's what the plaintiff is trying to prove. So one of the ways to prove that is, yes, they were in fact on a bill together in the late 60s when Led Zeppelin was just starting out and they played together. But, just because you were on a bill with a band doesn't mean you actually watched the other band play. Led Zeppelin saying, yeah, we were there, but we had to leave early before Spirit set. We never saw them. We weren't familiar with their songs.
Do you think Jimi Hendrix stayed and watched the Monkees when he opened up for them? I say no.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. That's a good point. But then you go back to, well, in the early days of Led Zeppelin, they were playing a lot of covers because they had just formed and they didn't have a whole lot of original material. One of the covers they played was a song called Fresh Garbage, at least the guitar riff for Fresh Garbage. That was a Spirit song. And both of them, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, have admitted to having that song in their own record collections and have admitted to being familiar with it and playing it. So they knew Spirit, at least this one Spirit song, Fresh Garbage. Doesn't necessarily mean they knew the song Taurus, but they had access to Spirit material.
My big question, I guess, with this, Jason, is why now? Why wasn't this, Stairway to Heaven has been out there making millions and millions of dollars for all these years. Why now, all of a sudden, is the estate of Randy California suing Zeppelin?
a lot of it has to do with copyright issues and the way things could be filed and couldn't be. And that had to do with a new law that was enacted in 2014 that basically allowed for a suit like this to go through. Previously, you couldn't sue for material that was before 1972, and the song Spirit was written in 1968. So that was one of the reasons. The other was the Blurred Lines trial and that whole thing, and Marvin Gaye's estate, the heirs winning that trial. And I think that proved to some people, hey, there is actually a shot here. We can do this. Now, because of the statute of limitations and everything, the money that they can recoup only goes back to 2011. We're not talking about most of the heyday of the earnings of Stairway to Heaven, if they're even to get the money. It only goes back to 2011. So, I mean, they'd be missing out on millions and millions of dollars if this case is proven.
So why bother then, you know?
It's still a large sum of money, though, isn't it, Jason? I mean, I don't know how to calculate it, but it would be a lot of money.
It depends on who you believe. Last week, the plaintiff put on a witness saying that Led Zeppelin's catalog since 2011 has earned $60 million. Okay, that's a big number. What percentage of that comes from earnings for Stairway to Heaven? Today in court, the defense put on a witness saying that Jimmy Page's earnings from Stairway to Heaven, just that one song, since 2011, was about $600,000. And Robert Plant's earnings from just that song was about $500,000. So you got about $1.1 million at stake.
And would that money come right out of Page and Plant's account? Do they PayPal?
They do not have a joint account, Bill.
They don't have a joint account. I was mistaken on that. I'm sorry.
What we've learned is that they actually have a whole bunch of shell companies. Each one of the members of the band has their own shell company, basically. Plant, Page, John Paul Jones, the bassist, and even John Bonham's son, or the heirs of John Bonham,
Jason,
who get royalties and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All right. You know, what I find interesting is this is, we can thank the late, great Randy California, because this is going to put these guys together for a reunion. Because John Paul Jones is not even in this case, and he showed up to support Page and Plant, didn't
wow.
he?
Well, he showed up because he was called to testify.
Oh, I didn't realize he was called to testify.
Yeah, he was called to testify, so he had to be here. But that is a good point. I mean, we see Robert Plant and Jimmy Page sitting together side by side every day. I'm watching them. They're talking a little bit, you know, and the band has gone back and forth. I think as of right now, everybody's kind of friendly, but we've known for years there's been back and forth. And one of the rumors was that recently, you know, they have this old cello concert coming up here in California in a couple months, where they have all these huge bands, right, that Plant was offered something like $14 million to perform there and have a reunion, and he turned it down, and that really upset Jimmy Page. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but the fact that all three of them have been in a room in the last week might be a good sign.
I am hopeful. Have they introduced other songs in court? Because I don't know whose defense it was that said Chim Chimney or Chim Chim Cheree from Mary Poppins has the same chord progression.
My Stairway to Heaven?
My Funny Valentine. And there is this old song from an Italian composer, Giovanni, what's his name, Kevin?
Giovanni Battista Granata.
And this is from what year? Is there any year mentioned, like in the
17th century? At some
17th
point.
Century. Can you listen to? I want to know if this was played in court. Jason Nathanson on the line with us. Tell me this isn't Stairway to Heaven, and this came out in the 17th century. How about that?
Is that the song? The title of that song, "To Catch a Shad"?
I don't know.
Okay, because it sounds very similar to one that is being called into question, and there's a specific recording of that song that they've been playing in court from 1963.
No, this is from the 17th century.
Right. That's the recording that they're playing is the year of that.
Okay,
but if that's not the song, I would also look up "To Catch a Shad" and play that whenever you can, because they're almost exactly the same song.
What's a shad, Jason? I don't know what a shad is.
I have no idea. I'll have to judge that next time I see him.
All right.
But the thing that they're trying to prove is, and they did, they brought in to court Chim Chimney, and trying to prove that certain songs have certain descending chromatic lines and that they have similar chord progressions, and they're in minor keys and things like that. And there are a lot of things that are actually similar. So that song you just played is one of them. If that is To Catch a Shad, that's another one of them. And they all sound similar to the songs Taurus by Spirit, as well as Stairway to Heaven.
So I think Zeppelin should counter sue and say that Spirit stole it from all these other songs.
they're laying the groundwork for that.
Are they really?
Jason, is it possible that Page and Plant are time travelers able to go to various centuries whenever they feel the need? Is that possible?
100%.
All right, good.
All right, so they're at lunch break right now, and this is in L.A., and what's going to happen now? When do we plan to have this come to any kind of conclusion?
So right now, so Plant was on the stand earlier today. Paige got called back to the stand, and it will resume after lunch. It's possible that the judge has been really tight on time and really keeping this thing going fast. So it should end today or tomorrow. The jury should, I would imagine, have the case by tomorrow. And then it depends on how long they deliberate, but we'll definitely probably, I would imagine, have a verdict this week for sure.
What do you think? How do you think it's going to go?
I think both sides have put on an interesting case. I mean, it's interesting how this goes. In court, when last week the plaintiff put on their experts and they mapped out how the song structure is the same and the notes are the same and the chord is the same, and you're like, oh yeah, that's absolutely 100% they stole it. And the defense puts on their case, and their expert witnessing puts on all this evidence saying there's no way the two are the same, and you get spun around. So if I'm on the jury, I mean, it's almost too technical for me to decide. I would say the jury right now would have to lean towards, I just don't know. You know, I'm not a technical expert in music, so I got to say they probably didn't steal it because it hasn't been proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Oh, interesting.
Jason, would it shock you if Robert Page got the death sentence for this?
That would shock me more.
Robert
than
Plant?
The traveling thing.
Yeah, Robert Plant. Right.
Could you get some autographs?
The traveling thing for sure.
Are you going to get some autographs while you're there?
I will. No, they are so strict about it. I mean, you can't even get near them.
Oh, no
pictures or cameras. There are a lot of fans here. A lot of kind of old time hippie, smelly-ish kind of fans.
Oh, please!
Every morning to watch this thing, and they line up at 6 o'clock in the morning to make sure that they get a seat. I mean, they're pretty fanatical, and it's kind of interesting to watch.
Oh, come on! It's the Stairway trial.
The jury finds the defendant bogus. That's what they'll say at the end.
Jason, please keep us posted on this, and I hope you do sneak in to get an autograph. He's Jason Nathanson, and he is covering the rock and roll trial of the century.
So far.
Thank you so much.
Can I just say this, though? If you want to see my courtroom drawing of Cajun Plant,
yeah?
I'm hoping to get them to sign, go to my Twitter feed, at ABC News Jason.
All right, we will, Jason. We can't wait to see it.
All right, cool.
Thank you. Have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, guys.
Jason Nathanson from ABC News.
ABC News Jason, is that what
yeah.
he said? I got to go look at it during
he
the break.
He sketched them during the trial.
Well, awesome. They might autograph it.
Sure.
And I want to compare and contrast some of these songs that were mentioned.
All right. The one from the 1700s sounds almost identical.
I know. So who lifted it, what from whom?
I don't know. We'll find that out next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Pretty close to Stairway to Heaven. This was done in the 17th century.
1700, so the 18th century. 1600s? I thought
17th century. Giovanni Battista Granata did that. That sounds just like Stairway to Heaven.
If it were played on a lute or something, right?
I think it is a lute.
Yeah.
Know your instruments for 20, Bill Love.
but the beginning, the first few notes and chords
it's
are
almost identical. And yeah. Here's Stairway. In question by Led Zeppelin, of course. Thanks,
it's skipping. Even though it's a tape, it's still skipping.
That's
yeah,
almost
that's,
identical
that's
to Giovanni's.
Similar. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, and now we're going to do Spirit, the song Taurus. Listen to Fresh Garbage if you have a chance, which Zeppelin admitted to covering. It's a really wiggy song.
Is it? Yeah.
But this is Taurus that allegedly Plant and Page lifted from Randy California.
Mm-hmm.
not hearing it now. Here we go. I mean, it's similar.
It's very similar.
Okay, and then the other, he mentioned when we were talking to Jason Nathanson, To Catch a Shad.
I don't know that song at all.
Well, we're going to hear it now.
All right.
This was brought up in court.
That old jackfish swimming up the stream.
Yikes.
Wait, leave this.
Jackfish, what did he mean? Baited my hook to catch.
This is the song I auditioned on The Voice with. Did you know that?
Was my old.
This is like Babe Winkleman's theme song. To catch a how does it spell? How do you spell a shad? Is that a fish?
S-H-A-D?
Yeah, shad, you know, shad. Like the fish. I prefer Ox Driver off this album. That's just me.
That's their best song on the album.
All right, well, that's similar. That's lovely little folk tune.
Wow.
But it's still the closest to the first one. Can we hear Giovanni Battista
Granada
again?
That's by far the closest.
That's like almost identical.
Yeah.
But Giovanni's not suing Zeppelin,
no.
So why should Randy California's estate?
Listen to that. That's almost the same.
Da, da, da. That's where it's a little different. All right, and this is. Can we hear Chim Chim Cheree just for the heck of it? Because they played this in court too, and I don't know if this was Page or Plant.
Oh, the minstrels want to know if they can go home early. By the way, they just sent me a scroll. They want to know if they can go home a few minutes early.
Sure, tell them that we're finished with.
Fellas, we got three more minutes.
All right, let me hear Chim Chim Cheree.
No, that's not even close.
Is there a part of it in it?
As lucky can be.
This isn't even remotely close.
Because also Michelle by the Beatles was brought up, and I know that there's a little guitar solo in that does sound maybe a little familiar.
But that's Bert the Chimney Sweep from Mary Tyler Moore, Mary Poppins. He wasn't stealing from Page and Plant or the other way around.
No, Page and Plant's defense are using it to say that there are other songs that are out there that have the same chord progression. We must be missing the part of Chim 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 Cheree.
I don't think that's even close.
What about Michelle by the Beatles? Sorry, we made Kevin do so much work today.
I know.
And there's like a part in it where I know there's a little finger plucking that.
Yeah, but I mean, I know the instrumental part of Michelle. That's not. I don't think that sounds. This is at the very beginning.
It's the same kind of. Kevin, you're a musician.
Hold on. It's a similar chord progression. I mean, in Western music, there's something called the 1-4-5. It's in like every song ever written ever. It's, you know, it's very simple. It's just you can't really get away from it. And if you do, it starts sounding like wild, crazy jazz.
So Page and Plant stole from every song ever written?
Yes.
They stole a bunch of blues tunes, which they've credited on their albums. Dazed and Confused is an old folk song from years back that they changed a little bit.
Right.
And do you have My Funny Valentine? That was the other one that was mentioned.
Yeah, but I'm not hearing it in this one either.
Is this the Honey Drippers?
Sarah Vaughan. This is a great song.
She has a beautiful voice. Wow. Sweet.
That was very sweet.
That was like boats are trying to get through the fog on that.
All right, well, again, there must be a part of this, but it's music. I mean, it's really difficult to...
Sure.
Because don't you hear things and you're inspired by
things? Oh, all the time,
We're inspired by the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis every day, and he's not suing
every
us
day.
As far as
well,
I know.
Well, you don't know. He may. All right, we'll take a quick break, and
good
then
luck,
we'll talk
Zeppi.
To... Good luck, Zeppi. We'll talk to Ronan and next, Bill and Wendy, WGN.